Advisors, please take your seats. I have one quick announcement before we begin. My understanding is that we have three people signed up to go to the thing this Thursday presented by, is that WCA, Sharon?
I think it's...
Or extension about is it open records and open meetings law and so forth. Three people are signed up. One cannot go. So if there's any board member who is interested in going this Thursday, it's already paid for, and I don't think we can get our money back. So we would like anybody who's interested, just talk to me or talk to Marion, and we'll get you signed up to go. That's this Thursday. What time does it start? Anybody know? Who else is going? Jill and Tom, are you? Sharon, okay.
Richland Center.
And I think it's like all afternoon or?
All morning.
All morning, okay.
It's all day.
Oh, it's an all day thing? Okay, so if you're interested, 9 to 3:30 is what Jill thinks. So if you're interested, let me or let Marion know and we'll make sure you get signed up. All right, then next we have proclamation for Law Enforcement Public Safety and Courts Month. You want me to do roll call? You don't want to just look at them? Marion would like us all to check in, and we want to keep Marion happy, so if you're here, please check in on the computer. Okay. 26 members are present. That's a quorum. All right. Item number 15, proclamation.
Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month. Whereas a free society, law enforcement is entrusted and expected to protect the civil rights of its residents and visitors, and whereas La Crosse County employees serve to enhance public safety in the courts, district attorney, sheriff patrol and jail, mediation and family court, juvenile services, emergency planning, medical examiner, and emergency services dispatching, and whereas thousands of residents and visitors are helped each year by the professionals who respond to emergencies and assisting those in need, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of May as Law Enforcement, Public Safety, and Courts Month and urges residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring the safety of its county residents and visitors.
Moved by Vicki Burke, seconded by Tara Johnson. Any discussion? All in favor of the proclamation, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. One other thing before we start on the rest of the agenda. Vicki Burke asked me to mention to people that you have a letter on your desk that she wrote in response to a letter that you received from some citizens in the county. So that is on your desk. Ms. Burke, I'll give you a few seconds.
I wanted to make an announcement for Judiciary and Law tomorrow. If they noticed on their agenda that there is a tour at 2 o'clock, I would ask for those members to bring this department budget goals with them as well, if they could.
Okay.
Thank you.
John Menninger.
Just while we're on that, if there's not a law enforcement construction meeting tomorrow, is there, it was on that initial sheet you sent out, the next one is like May 20th or something?
Right, the next scheduled one is May 20th.
Okay. So that's Thursday.
Right.
All right. Tonight we're talking about the Law Enforcement Center, and let's start with item number 2, update on the LEC building progress and bidding slash inflation concerns. Paul Brumman.
What we thought we'd do, particularly for new board members, we're going to keep this brief for longer-serving members, but we wanted Paul to give us an overview of the whole project before we get into the details of LEED as well as the bid estimate on where we're at right now. So this is Paul Brumman with Potter Lawson.
Good evening. We want to just give you a quick overview of the master planning concept that we have for the Law Enforcement Center. We started with a Carey report. That was the study that was done by an outside specialist in justice facility planning, and they came back with 17 recommendations, and I won't go through those. We had slides, but that's another whole series of things that we went through, and we looked at the 17 recommendations, and we came up with 14 that we incorporated into the long-term master plan for the Law Enforcement Center. The three that we didn't do are just postponed at the present time, because of staffing issues, and we don't have the population needed, but that we wanted to consider them for long term. The First, phase one. We've broken this down into four phases. And the first phase is the new addition to the existing law enforcement center. The gray building on the top right, I think I can. Here it is. Doesn't work. There it is. The gray building is the existing building. The yellow would be the new addition. So we're filling out the block to the west. The building that you see on the north there, north is to the left. The building would be the garage, and the utility building would be are going to be built in the parking lot just north of the law enforcement center. So the first phase is broken down into a four-story addition to match the existing building. So the first floor would be justice center, jail, sheriff operations. The first floor is probation, parole, and other vacant space for future tenants. And the next floor up would be housing. This would be the third and fourth levels. It's a two-story open housing pod. This would accommodate 114 beds in a new direct supervision. The trend is to go from their podular remote system that they have now to a direct supervision type of observation of the inmates. It's better for the people. It's a management plan that the sheriff can implement and reward the people that are behaving well and put the people that aren't behaving well in their individual cells. So this is phase one. Pretty much covers this the entire block, and what you see there is that phase two then, once we have the building up, and this would be a long term, this is out however many years it takes, you would develop the interior area for a new receiving pod. That's that blue area. There it is. The blue area would be a new receiving pod, and that would be when the demand is there for the sheriff to do that, and also staffing. It would require a new staff position. Phase three then, future, we want to keep planning for the future. We could go up another whole 114 beds and another stack right above the ones we're building now. We have the elevators, the infrastructure, and everything would be put in there for that. And then phase four is building over the existing building, which has already been designed for going up over that also. And way out in the future, depending on the court's expansion, you could even add more courts in the front half of the new law enforcement center you see there. So those are pretty much the long-term master plan. We want to make sure that you can accommodate growth in the structures that we're providing. Don, you want to talk?
Sure.
Don from Market & Johnson, now we'll talk about the budget, just to explain what the pieces are.
Mr. Bina has a question.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I've been reading everything you guys are putting out and the minutes and everything, probation and parole hasn't done anything yet. They are a statewide organization, and evidently, are we going to get any money in compensation?
Don, that's actually getting a little bit ahead of where we are right now. Why don't you hold that question until we get into the debate a little bit later on?
All right.
That there are some answers to that, but we'll hold that for right now.
Okay. We have space in the building for them.
Ready for the budget?
You bet.
Thank you. In February, Paul and Val finished the schematic design, and we tried to go through and update the budget. If you'll remember, before the schematic design, we're working with square foot numbers based on existing buildings that were constructed. Once Paul and Val finished the schematics, we're able to go through and take off some quantities and actually put prices to them. At schematics, a lot of the building is not designed yet. Your mechanical electrical system hasn't really been designed, so we couldn't do physical takeoff there. In those areas, we apply square foot prices to it. And if you look at the resolution number of $29,500,000, that's the number we have to hit. We had at the end of schematics an estimated cost of construction of $25,205,000. I'll skip over the contingency for a minute. We've included in your budget 1.5% for furnishings, movable furniture, 2.5% for the construction management fee, we use 6.15% for the architectural fee. There's 7% for remodeling, 6% for new. It's just about all new. reimbursable, the borings, the state-approved plans, bidding documents. We put in $200,000 budget, and the cost of the bond issuance, $400,000. Now, the contingency is just the difference between those numbers. If you look below the resolution, at the end of schematics, what we would really like is a contingency of about 7.5%, which would be about $1.9 million. And you can see where we are today. We're just over $1 million. So it's a little less than we want. We're looking for areas that would help reduce that. And we've got some thoughts and some ideas how we can do a little bit better with some of that. Is there any question on that? Now, just to clarify, when they get through design development drawings, we'll go through and do a budget again. Things will be a little bit more detailed. We'll be able to get a little more accurate. Any questions on the budget right now?
Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 7.5%, you said we would like to have 7.5%. Yes. Is that based on historic figures? Is that based on, what's that based on? Why would you like to have 7.5%?
Because we don't want to be over budget. Mm-hmm. More the drawings develop, we're going to get more details. We know we're going to run into some more issues. There's going to be some things that were never planned. So we want to have some cushion. And after we bid the project, we still want to have 3% on the new going into construction. Because even after the construction starts, there'll be changes. And in all honesty, most of them end up being owner-generated. As things start to go together, they're going to have more ideas of what would be good. But I'm trying to remember what meeting was. But we kind of started out this whole thing on the square foot. We started out with a 15% contingency. And as we get more information, you know, we can accept it going a little lower, but we don't want it to, we really don't want to have no contingency at this point in time.
Right, but somewhere between no and 7.5%, I mean, can you speak to Market and Johnson's history in terms of whether that 7.5% is average, typical? I mean, where does that fall from compared to other projects that you've done in particular?
That's the target we try to hit, Tara.
Because that's been your experience.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Maureen Friedland.
I just want to go over one thing that you said. You said that 29.5 is the number that we have to hit. So we had that number, and that's the number that we were working with. Is that correct? And you were looking at existing buildings without additional energy features, high efficiency features, and without the kinds of items that we're talking about now. That's a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. It was based on past projects.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Update the schedule at this point. Boy, I can't even read that. The schedule really hasn't changed too much since last time we looked at it, but the main building is the top half of the sheet, and the sheriff's garage and the housing pod are in the lower half. On the main building, what we've looked at is towards the end of July, hopefully having a foundation excavation set of drawings that can go out as bid package one and bid package two. We hope to have the rest of the drawings complete by the middle of August. Down on the sheriff's and the housing pod, originally we were shooting to have the bidding documents ready April 1st. As they started to develop, we could see a need to get the utility building included in there and the new generator and transformer ordered, so they went a little bit longer. We should have bids back on that on May 13th, and hopefully we can get your approval on those two portions on May 15th. So really, from the last meeting, things haven't really changed, other than those are a little bit backed up by the utility building. If you have any questions on schedule? Sure.
Don, can you comment on the bidding environment and what's happening in this region and some of our concerns?
Some of our concerns? You bet. Some of the hurdles we're going to have to overcome to hit our budget is there are a number of larger projects that are going to be bid in this area before your project. I think you're all aware of the stadium, That did go ahead. Holman has got three different school projects that they're bidding. GET's got a large school project they're bidding. WTC's got a sizable project. So we've got some projects ahead of us that we wish we didn't have ahead of us. I don't know if any of you have checked the price of gas lately. That's been a little bit of an issue. I think on September 26th, when you approved the 29.5, went back and looked, and I think gas in La Crosse was $2.95 a gallon. So you're up about 20%. All of our suppliers, I probably get a half a dozen notices every week about the cost of material going up because of the energy increase. We're not seeing it in the bids right now because there's not a lot of work out there. Our fear is that as more work gets started, they're going to escalate their price. Back when we did the schematic the end of February, the structural people, we talked to a few vendors. They told us figure $1,700 a ton. I called them a month later. They said figure $1,800 a ton. So in a month, you know, they're saying it went up 6%. I've got flyers on the metal studs that tell me figure 10 to 15% this month and 10 to 15% next month. So there's a lot of pressure out there with the energy issue, and how it'll sort out, I honestly can't tell you, but you know, we're very nervous about that. So it is a concern. I don't know what to do about it. Who knows? Maybe as the election comes around, it'll all drop. Who knows? Maybe that's being a little too optimistic, but you know, the work that we see coming ahead of your project, and if something doesn't happen with fuel, I'm worried. I'm on three of the state committees for labor negotiations, and we did assume some inflation in your project, and as far as labor negotiations, I think we're going to be fine with them. It's going to be the material that is the question mark.
Okay. Keep going.
And just particularly for new board members, Chairman Doyle will also remind you of this, that the resolution that was passed last fall set the limit at 29.5, and anything going beyond that requires a two-thirds vote, both by state statute, because that was budgeted, as well as what the board set within the initial resolution. In addition to that, there were square foot estimates for each one of the main areas that if any one of those individually exceeds 15% of that number, specific amount for justice sanctions, probation, parole, jail, each individual part, that also requires a two-thirds vote. So as we're doing this planning, we're trying to stay within the guidelines that the board has set because we have no other choice other than requesting a change by a two-thirds vote, and programmatically, area by area, we're also doing the same thing. So your staff and your design team continually look back at how what's being designed right now matches what the boundaries were that were set by this board.
Joe Veenstra.
Thank you. I have a question about what the built-in inflation rate was for the project.
I think we're about 4.5%.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to get into the whole thing about economics, but if there's a building crisis that people are not building, is the price of goods going down but offset by the price of transportation? And it's not a wash, it's an actual addition?
No, I mean, from what we're seeing, it's going to be an addition. I mean, there's really nothing that goes into your building that doesn't take energy to produce it. The transportation cost is part of it, but, you know, steel is the one that's really on the hot button right now, and it takes a lot of energy to produce steel. And, of course, they're saying it's still all going over to China, so...
Okay, so we're not getting any break on supply and demand in terms of our building materials.
You are actually today, wood is probably at an all-time low, but in recent years, wood is extremely low. Unfortunately, there's just about no wood in your project. But with the as luck would have it,
can we change that?
Can we change that? Sure. Yeah. I mean, the housing market, I think, is seeing what you were talking about, has just been decimated. So. We're buying wood as inexpensively as we ever have, but it won't make much of a jail.
Chuck Spiker.
Question on a two-thirds vote. Is that of the full board or the members present with a quorum?
That's the full board.
Full board.
Right.
Thank you.
By statute.
So if people abstain, that counts as like a no vote then, right? Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
But you knew that, Chuck. Yes, he did. All right, Don, keep going. Or Paul or whoever.
We're done.
You're done?
You said be brief.
The next piece, though, is to summary and overview of the LEED standards, the scorecard, and the handout, because the majority of the body have not walked through or discussed this. This is an attempt to, before we get to the debate and discussion on resolutions, that there is a review of some of the numbers that went into those resolutions. So I'm going to ask either Don or Paul to walk through. What we're talking about is the green sheet. That's the scorecard. These were all in your packet. And eventually the purple sheet, which is a list of energy optimizing things. Don't go to that yet, but that's something that we will end up referring to. So I don't know, Don, if you or Paul want to walk through this.
Yeah, we'll certainly walk through it. I'll just see if I have the same one Paul has. That should be the one. Same one the board has? Might get confusing otherwise. Okay. Starting at the top, what we're asked to do is for the LEED certification to break it down by prerequisites, the compliance services, and then the likely achievable points, basically from the highest cost down to the lowest cost. So under the prerequisites, it starts with one thing you have to have done to your building is the what they call fundamental commissioning. And you can see over in about the fourth or fifth column on the right, we have $280,000 in there for that. And commissioning, there's numbers all over the place to put it quite simply. I know I shared with Maureen some literature that was out on it that the commissioning agent alone is running anywhere from 0.3% to 0.9%, which is a factor of three different. What we did is we did basically a high and a low and took the average for that $280,000, worked with Paul's mechanical designer, and they estimated the commissioning agent's cost at about $120,000. Went to a seminar on LEED's estimating, and what they said for the commissioning, it adds about 5% to the mechanical labor and 5% to the electrical labor. That came up, when you added those, with a total of $365,000. There was a lot of discussion about the 5%. We thought, well, let's run one also at 3% for the mechanical and electrical labor. And then also we had a very inexpensive commissioning price. Those added up to the $196,000, and what we did is we took the average. Next item.
Don, before you go any further,
yes.
Some people may not know what commissioning is. Can you define that for the board?
Sure. Commissioning is really just a real thorough checkout of your building by a third party when it's complete. For LEEDs, the commissioning agent would verify and run through completely the mechanical system, the temperature controls, the plumbing, the electrical. Should you end up with the solar hot water system, they would go through with the different trades and make sure they're running at peak efficiency. You know, a lot of buildings, and I think a lot of the reasons commissioning has become more and more popular, is your building will run without commissioning. There's no doubt about it. Will you know exactly what's not working correctly? You really won't. A lot of people are going to that independent third party that has a great deal of expertise. They listed in LEEDs, they want someone that has installed it in the field, that has designed it, that has done the test and balancing. They want a person that's really very well versed in this to go through each specific item. Go ahead, Tom.
You're on a roll, and I didn't want to interrupt that.
Yeah, I saw the hand.
Yeah,
come up.
But maybe an extra foot stomper for these folks. Commissioning isn't something that normally happens in the normal construction process, which was a big eye-opener for Mr. O'Malley and for many of the rest of us, is these kinds of, especially third-party evaluations, to confirm that these systems play together the way they were intended and expected to do so doesn't happen if you don't get the commissioning. You can say, I bought really expensive stuff, but to say, I know that it plays together the way the vendors of each of those 2 to 5 pieces promised, you don't know if you don't have the commissioning evaluation.
That's exactly true. It's you're buying a building, you know it should be running right, but until you have that third party come through and really go through every system, you really don't.
Don, I have a question, and Mr. O'Malley's heard me ask this numerous times, so he's going to be bored listening to it. Why is that not included in your basic price? I mean, it's like buying a car and then saying you have to take it in for a tune-up before you start driving it. Why would the systems not, to use Tom's language, play together as well as possible in a building that any architect would deliver to a buyer? And I know I'm not pointing fingers at these guys, sure. I know that's how it works, but why does it work that way? When you spend $29.5 million, then you need to spend another couple hundred thousand dollars to have it work right.
I hate to say it, Steve, but it is a standard in the industry. I mean, commissioning just isn't part of what you get. You know, your car, you'll take and drive it out. Unless you come back and tell them there's a problem, they won't know it. And it's kind of the same thing with your building. It's not that the system won't work. It's not that the system won't run. But it really hasn't been checked out thoroughly enough by a third party. And, you know, your question would be, you know, as a construction manager, should I be doing that? When you read what they want a commissioning agent, what they're looking for their experience, we don't have it. I mean, it's very specialized.
Leon Paffman.
Thank you. I was just going to say that I always expected that to be the general contractor's job, was to have that stuff coordinated. And he's the general contractor is the general contractor.
He is. And he's...
Well,
no, the general contractor is, but does he have a lot of expertise in exactly how the mechanical system works? In reality, they really don't. The temperature control systems alone have gotten so sophisticated that I would be lying if I said I know how they work. I know how to program them. I know how to do that.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. In reading about LEED, the one piece that I've run across more than once is, but not guaranteed. Can you tell me what the whole, if there were a problem, to whom would we go? Would we go to the manufacturer? Would we go to the builder? Would we go back to the LEED person? And who would be responsible if we did run into an issue? You know, and I'm, like at Southern Bluffs with the school district when they had the mold issue, it was like,
yes.
and the carpeting issue.
Yeah.
To whom do we go? Because my understanding was the commissioning meant this is going to work. You're more, you know, but I keep running into this but not guaranteed phrase.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the not guaranteed is. I guess if there's any issue in construction, it would start back with us. And we would have to find the people with the expertise or the people responsible to take care of it. But that's not really the commissioning part of it. And I know this sounds a little fuzzy, but the commissioning is a third party really checking each specific system. You're talking about the mold issue. I mean, that's a good example of where you didn't have the commissioning. This was found much later. I'm assuming, yeah. And that's what you're trying to avoid with the commissioning. I've gone back to buildings a year old, 10 years old, that have had problems, and you'll start going through it with somebody with the expertise, and they'll find something was installed incorrectly or something wasn't programmed correctly. And that's what this commissioning tries to eliminate from day one.
Did I see some other hands up? Don Vina?
Well, to follow up on what you were just talking about, the way I look at it, it's just like a car or a tractor or any other piece of equipment. You buy it, and it theoretically should be right. Does, you know, we spend better than $250,000 on lead. And the way I look at it, when we're through with the first year, we probably have to get those guys back again and redo what they did the year before, because a car and a tractor and any other piece of machinery is not going to be running efficiently a year after it's here. And if this is an ongoing thing, you're looking at a big bill.
Yeah, normally we don't see the commissioning agents come back. I think there's a 10-month checkup with some of the stuff. But part of the leads, and one of the points here, is putting additional measuring and metering devices in the mechanical systems so that your staff can make sure they're continuing to run at peak performance. It's going to be an ongoing...
So then you're saying there is something we are buying besides service for the $250,000. You said you have things that measure...
As we go down through this list, okay. I'll talk about those.
All right. Ralph, Gary?
Tailgating on what Margaret was bringing up, what's the architect's role on this? Don't they spec it to meet certain standards, and doesn't the architect check it out to make sure those standards were met? You know, you're talking about the construction person or whatever. Somebody's got to design this thing in the first place. And if they designed it, you mean when it's done, they can't tell us if the thing is functioning the way it was intended to function? Is that what you're telling us? They're specking it, and I mean, the board wants an energy-efficient building. We want the heating to work right. We want the mechanical.
Before I answer for you, Eric, and just completely bury you, you want to jump in?
Apparently, I've created a monster here on this one.
Wow. What do we specify the material. You go through a construction process where those materials come in shop drawings. They get approved, installed. Elements of the project work together. I mean, one piece of equipment feeds and works with another piece of equipment. As part of our services on this project, we have a two-day, I don't know what we termed it when we went through this, you know, training with the staff, operations of the systems, so that the installing contractor walks through with our engineers and with us and with your county maintenance people how these systems operate. Are they operating at the peak performance? That's something that the third-party commissioning agent does. That they're operating and sequencing correctly, that's something that our engineers would be doing.
Didn't you spec the building to meet certain standards?
Sure.
Doesn't the heating thing have to meet a certain standard? The air conditioning meets certain standards?
It's going to get specified.
Insulation.
Right.
And you mean when it's done, we have to have somebody else come in to tell us if it's working right?
A lot of this is mechanical, electrical systems are commissioned. And it's the operation and integration of those systems together that the third party looks at.
I'm not worried about the third party. I'm more worried about you right now. I'm worried that this thing is done. Get somebody else to come in here to figure out if this is running right. We just spec'd it. We don't know if it's going
to
run
They're
right.
Here to tell you that it's running correctly. Sure they are.
Are you going to be able to tell us if it's running efficiently as it was intended when that thing is done, or do we have to get somebody else?
In order to specify and get the lead point and credit, you have to hire a third-party commissioning agent.
Fine. If we didn't want the lead point, are you going to be able to tell us that?
Our people are going to be on site for 2 days verifying that all the systems are working. Your contractors that are installing it are part of that. They're here with your maintenance staff, our people, to understand that the systems are installed correctly and in accordance with the drawings and documents. We're not on the job site every day. So that is a portion where the contractor proves to us that the systems are functioning and functioning correctly.
Okay. You drew up these payback things. If you do this, it takes this long. If you do that, it takes this long.
That's Michael's engineering drew those up, yes.
Okay.
Not us.
Okay. What is your function then when this is done?
The architectural function?
I mean, do we rely on you for the next 2 days, the next year, the next 6 months? When do we cut ties with you?
We typically get calls back. You know, it could be a year later. We'll sit down, and we're going to take your pulse a year later after this project's complete. And we can come out and go through the project. That's typically what we do.
I think, let me help you out here a little bit, Eric, too. since I started this one. I think that what you're saying is that when things are installed and the building is done, things are working properly. They meet the specs.
Correct.
But can they be tweaked or finessed a little bit to make them work even a little bit better? I mean, is that kind of what this commissioning agent does, is to make sure that it is at its peak performance as opposed to just meeting specs?
I would agree with that statement, okay. Yes.
No charge for that one. Sharon.
Thank you. Can you help clarify why there are different levels of commissioning? Because we've got one thing that says 90, another one says 280, and how does the LEED certification work with those different levels of commissioning?
The 280 for the LEED, that's commissioning all of your systems, your HVAC, your temperature control, your electrical, your plumbing. If you end up with the solar hot water heater, you know, right down to your kitchen equipment, they're doing everything. And we've included with that an allowance for the mechanical electrical contractors to work with the commissioning agent through this. You know, what Eric is talking about is very typical, a two-day training. This is much more intensive than that. This is more like the month training and the month testing. The 90,000, I went to a test and balance contractor I've worked with for years that does commissioning of buildings. He does not do LEED commissioning. More documentation, more paperwork, more systems. I asked him, I said, if the county is looking for a scaled back commissioning so that we know that the parts you have trouble with the majority of the time are working right, what would you suggest? And he said, I would do the commissioning on the temperature control and on the HVAC system. And he said he would spend about a month here running through every scenario with a temperature control contractor running that system, every different situation you would hit. So that's the big difference.
So then to get LEED certification, that would not be sufficient commissioning?
That's correct.
Okay, so the $280,000 bid that we're looking at, or whatever you call it, that's to test all systems up to LEED certification level.
That's your commissioning agent and additional labor for the electrical contractor and mechanical contractor to go through that with them. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Ann Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To hopefully help people understand this a little better, I've been to umpty-jillion meetings with you guys, and I think what I've understood is that you have said things are so complicated now and so advanced technology-wise with heating, air conditioning, electrical, and everything, that you can't expect the architect, the general contractor, or just one entity to have all the answers. And so you need a third party to come in who does have this very sophisticated expertise. Is that what you're saying, that things are just way more advanced than, say, 10, 20 years ago? At least that's what I've been getting out of all the, and that's the only rationale that I've come out with, that we have to have a third party because it's just so complicated now.
It is far more complicated than it's ever been. I was going to try to find in the LEEDS book what they're looking for experience for the commissioning. See if I can find this here. This will probably give you a little bit better description if I can put my hand on it. Go ahead and talk for a while, Eric, while I find this.
But also it's true that we can go for commissioning and any of the green plans that, you know, we think we can afford and do without going to all the LEED certification. So, right, that's an option we have,
correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
For the LEED, this is the commissioning person. In order to meet this prerequisite, owners are required to use qualified individuals to lead the commissioning process. Qualified individuals are identified as those who possess a high level of experience in the following area: energy systems design, installation, and operation, commission planning and process management, hands-on field experience with energy systems, performance, interaction, startup, balancing, testing, troubleshooting, operation and maintenance, energy system automation control knowledge. So they want someone with really a high level of experience, design, installation, and startup. Really aren't that many people around that fit this.
And right, and that's another thing, that there aren't that many who can do this, so they can demand a high price.
Well, I think they spend a lot of time at it. I'm not really...
But also they must be able to if there's only a few,
I think
expertise.
Yeah, I think there's people out there doing it that don't fit this bill, let me put it like that.
So we have to make sure we get somebody good then.
I think you want... This is where you want an expert.
Okay.
It's kind of like you're going to the family doctor or you're going to a surgeon.
Thank you. I just thought that would maybe help people understand.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't you keep going down the list?
Okay. That's storage and collecting of recycling. That's just sorting recycling. I think I put in about 3 hours a week for the sorting for the $15,000. At minimum energy performance, that's what you paid Michaels to do the computer modeling of your building. Those next items are prerequisites that really have no cost involved. I don't know if you want me to go through those or not.
No.
Thank you. Compliance services. For the lead process, we went and got a quote, and it doesn't mean this is going to be the person or this is going to be the number, but we talked with an individual, Madison Environmental, that does basically all the documentation and writes the plans for the construction process. They visit the site. They verify everything is in compliance. They come and do the training on the recycling and the different issues. They would be with us throughout the project. They had an estimate from somewhere between $97,000 and $102,000, so I plugged in $100,000 for that. Potter Lawson has to do additional design work to get the lead done, a lot of additional documentation, and I think they just shared the number with us. The actual design portion taking us up to construction would be about $26,000 of that, and the documentation and the submittal afterwards is about another $61,000. So that ends up being their $87,000. So between those two, the design and all the paperwork involved in this, it's about $187,000. The optimizing energy, $366,000. This is from the computer modeling that Michaels Engineering did. If we took all of their items, including the solar, it was about $366,000. I think you have a sheet that has highlighted that adds up to about $307,000 out of there. $95,000 of that after the rebates is the solar. What we talked about at the committee and what we plugged in is basically $295,000 for the items that are highlighted. You know, some of those items would already be in your building. It's kind of hard sorting through that, but it adds to $307,000. We used $295,000 for that. And that's all improvements over and above the baseline of where the code is today. The code's just changed. The code's got more stringent. This is the energy efficiencies over and above the code. Yes, sir.
Yes, the change from the old code until the March 1st code, what is approximately the increase in efficiency from the old code till the 2008 code?
I asked Michaels about that, and I think the last time the code was updated, and maybe you know it was 89, before this last energy code update, major one. Most recent?
2016.
Yeah. What Michaels had told me is it is increased by efficiency of about 30%.
Okay.
And I thought he was going back further than the 2000 when he told me that.
So from 2000 to 2008 is about 30% increase?
Well, I'm sure Michaels went, he went back, I thought, into the 90s is what he told me.
Pre-Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And then what is the percentage under the old system? What would we have had to do to get leads? Was it basically similar to what the new code actually did?
The new code did not change anything.
Yeah, the code did not change it. They were both working off ASHRAE
90.1 2004,
or your local building code, whichever is more stringent.
So there's not a way to compare what that new code did as far as
leads?
If we had built a year ago versus building now, how much more efficient are we forced to be because of building code changes?
Well, Eric can help me on this, but I think LEEDS says 2004 ASHRAE 90.1 or the local code, whichever is more stringent. So we would have still had to go by the ASHRAE.
Okay, I'm obviously not doing well. What percent, okay, in 2000 or in March of this year, a new code went in?
Yes.
That code is what percentage more efficient than the one of a year ago?
Well, I don't have an exact number on that.
A swag.
Yeah, I couldn't give you a swag, Ray. What I said when I talked with Michaels, when they were going from the last code, which is not last year, they told me this new code is 30% more efficient.
Thank you, sir.
I can't tell you where we were from last year to this year.
Ralph Geary?
I've got another question about that heating ventilating. I remember when we were going to replace the large boiler and Train Company came out with a prototype thing. It was a series of 8 smaller boilers, you know, where they do that zone heating thing. And they did it, and they monitored it and trained our staff. I think they were on it for a couple of years because of it was something new on the market, and they wanted to see how it worked, and we were local. Do they have anything? Have we contacted them to see if they've got any thing new, and they do the they do the monitoring or the commissioning or whatever, or can we do that? Can we spec that if they can give us some kind of deal?
I think the mechanical engineer can certainly talk to Train and see what they have. What they're talking is a multiple of small boilers again. You know, that's what they're recommending. Actually, higher efficiency than your existing jail. So we'd have to add an LP backup system to it. I think now you're backed up with oil.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. That second credit under likely achievable is the $95,000 for solar system, which is included in that $295,000. Starting from the left, SS 4.2, alternate transportation, bike storage, and changing rooms. One of the lead points encourages people riding bikes, and they want to have bike racks for 5% of the FTEs and shower and changing stations for 0.5% of the FTEs. So what we're assuming is a concrete pad, 30 bike racks, and adding 2 restrooms with showers. Next item, 6.1 under the site, is collecting 25% of the 2-year 24-hour storm collection, and what we'd really be doing is adding some bioswales into the parking lot to drain the water and filter it through the ground instead of dumping it into the storm sewer and into the roof. That's one point.
Audrey Catter.
Thank you. On the storm sewer one, I noticed that you show no payback, but given the fact that the city is very likely going to be charging for storm sewer assessments, there likely would be a payback.
Yes. Yeah. That's not in effect yet, right?
It's coming.
It's coming? They have agreed to it, or?
No, but okay. It's...
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't do anything with that.
But would we... Do you know, would we get a credit? I thought it's based upon your square footage of impervious surface.
That's what they're looking at, but it's not finalized yet.
In my last employer, we had a stormwater utility. There were credits, but each city makes that policy decision by themselves, mm-hmm. according to the ordinance that's adopted. So it charges users based on their number of square feet of impervious surface, and then it's optional whether or not they provide credits to builders and developers and owners against that. And I believe the ordinance has not been finalized or has not been passed.
No, it's being studied at the moment.
Well, hopefully our city council members will take care of that, right, Audrey and Jay?
Sure.
Jay?
I did send Paul preliminary numbers on what those costs
would likely be. So you may have some information for supervisors.
Okay. You have that? You have the numbers?
It was $47 for 20-some hundred square feet, $22.85 or something like that. We did check that out with our civil engineer. We can look at options as far as how much impervious area, but the payback was pretty far out. I mean, it was 20, 30 years. The cost of providing green area versus parking, and the county really needs as much parking as you can get. So those are the trade-offs.
Next item. On the next page, measurement verification. And the mechanical designer would add some additional metering in your mechanical system that would assure you that it can be monitored and it is running at peak performance. So there's additional cost for the metering, and then the county, to get the lead point, has to monitor it and adjust it for a minimum of 1 year afterwards, which I think you would do it anyway. You know, exactly how much of this metering and what to put in for a price was kind of a question mark. I talked to Potter's mechanical engineer, and they said that could run anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000. So I plugged in $30,000. So you can see at this point, with the systems undesigned, some of these numbers really are a swag.
But Jay Johnson?
Sorry, my light's burned out. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, these meters would tell us whether or not the equipment is running optimally as it's designed.
That's my understanding, correct? Yes.
So my question is, if we can do that with $15,000 to $50,000 worth of meters, why would we hire a third party for this much larger number? Won't they give us the same information?
Well, hopefully they'll get it up and get it running perfectly, and then all you'll have to do is monitor it.
But if
you want to do the leads, we have to hire this commissioning agent. That's a prerequisite.
I understand, and I'm doing a little bit of devil's advocacy,
sure,
I guess.
That's
but,
fine.
Thank you.
John Menninger.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest, as this gentleman goes through this, that we don't spend a lot of time on the small items, but if it's maybe it's over $20,000, he could mention it. If it's under that, I really don't think. Otherwise, we might as well not have a committee that goes through this stuff over and over and over on 70 different items, but that's up to the body if they have any questions.
So you're saying under $20,000, we don't care?
I'm just saying that's what the committee is for.
I think that, Don, what you can do is kind of gloss
speed,
over those.
Speed it up?
Yeah. I mean, don't. I wouldn't necessarily go as far as saying ignore them, but hit the highest points.
Let me go through the last that have dollar values as quickly as I can. 3.1 is construction indoor air quality management. That's managing the indoor air quality during construction, additional filtering, duct cleaning, etc. 3.2 is flushing out your building before occupancy. LEED requires you to exchange with outdoor air 14,000 cubic foot per square foot of building. Low emittance materials for painting and coatings is basically just low VOCs for all your painting, coatings, varnishing. Recycled content. In the prerequisite, or I think in an earlier point at no cost, it was using 10% recycled goods. This would get you up to 20. Regional materials, that's getting 20% of the materials within a 500-mile radius. We assume 10% at no cost, and we put a little cost in to do the other. Outdoor air delivery monitoring systems, these are CO2 monitoring systems that are put on to make sure your system is running properly. Thermal comfort design, 7.1 for $10,000. That's just taking the design and the comfort you get to a higher level. I'm not really sure what ASHRAE 55204 exactly covers, but in talking to the engineer, that's where you're going. Indoor chemical and pollutant sources. This is your kitchen, your laundry, where you have copiers, basically changing the air in those and actually making them negative. Construction waste material, 2.1. is diverting 50% either by weight or by volume away from a landfill. Low emitting adhesives and sealants, that's just low VOC products in those areas. Low emitting materials for the wood is using wood without urethormaldehyde resins in it. And then those next two items for $2,000 each are really just some parking signs that we would be adding. One is for carpool areas, and the other is for driving alternative vehicles. You get to park a little closer to the building. Those are pretty much the items that have dollar values with them. If there's questions on anything else, if you look at the unlikely, possible but not likely, I mean, we looked at the price on the next page, on page 3, under the site 5.2 of doing half of your roof as a green roof, and that added $435,000. We ruled that out. Heat island effect, using a white roof or a green, well, it wouldn't be a green roof. Using a white roof was quite expensive with just about no payback. But that's really kind of a summary of the score sheet. We did go through it at depth, as Mr. Metiger said, in the committee, made the selections.
Any other questions on the green sheet? Oh, Sharon Hampson.
This is a minor point, but it's under unachievable, unlikely, certified wood. At the WCA meeting I went to last week, I heard something about a Jackson County forest that certifies their wood. So you're right here, you're saying it may not be achievable. It might be.
It very possibly could be. Probably your largest quantities of wood in this building are going to be your doors. And we can get the core of the door with certified wood, but we haven't been able to find the veneer face. So in talking with some other designers that have gone for this point, this has been a tough one to get.
Don Bina.
I had a question earlier about you were going to put in bike racks and everything. How many bikers do we have going to the jail? I would assume you're not only looking at the workers, but also the inmates. I really don't know.
We were making our best estimate, but we said if your maximum in that building, courts, everything else, is 600 people, we use the 5%, that would be adding 30% bike racks, or 30 bike racks, and the 5% comes from leads. That's a requirement. Whether 600 people are ever going to be in that building, I don't know. But that's how we arrived at that.
Any other questions on the green sheet? Okay, are we talking about the purple sheet next, or no?
This one? Okay. Yours came up in green. This is purple? Okay, yours is in purple. This is the sheet we got from Michaels Engineering when they did the engineering modeling, and they started with your building at the baseline of the current code, and they went through enhancements to the mechanical system, to the lighting system, to make you more energy efficient. And in the committee, what we decided was the most efficient is, I don't know, did they come as different colors? So they're highlighted, they're not? Okay.
But it was excluded, so.
Okay.
So the bright.
You can kind of see here in the green, the baseline, your energy usage, he estimated 184,000. If we took all of these items in green, is what we agreed to, that was about the $295,000, including the solar hot water, which we can easily bid as an alternate. We did not, because of the long paybacks, the last three items, at this point, we did not take them. There was still a fair amount of discussion on them, and whether some of them will get included or not, I don't know. But these are items, it's a little confusing. If you look way to the left, he's got A1 as his baseline. He has to take these assumptions in order. So A1 is the baseline. And then you'll look A2, which is actually one we didn't take, is the added roof insulation is down here. That's his next assumption. So you get a savings of $1,300. Then you go to A3, which is, she doesn't have lines on here, it's kind of up in the middle of the green, better south and west windows, that drops another $4,000. What we told them to do is print them out in order of payback. I think I went through and calculated this. If we took all the items in green, I think we're just over that 21% in energy savings that you need to get the 4 points in the leads.
Tom Rock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation on this sheet, and we wrestled through it several times in the committee. And, in fact, it's produced by pretty complex software that mandates the interchangeability and the effect on each other by each of these items. And that's what Don was talking about. The A number on the left side sort of really tells you what the ripple and relationship effect is between those. And maybe having wrestled it down to the nearest finite dollar on this, really the message is, if you use all those nouns in the left column, you're going to come close to the 307 or now 295 number. And yes, they will cost money. And yes, in the far right-hand column, they will give us a payback on energy efficiency. And not get too carefully slicing and dicing those numbers in the middle of that chart.
Yeah, I did talk with Chris Pankowski that did the modeling, and he has to take them, you know, in an order. But, you know, I told him if we don't take them in that order, is it really going to make a lot of difference? And he said it really won't. And I got the impression from him, if we decide we're taking that chunk, he will run the modeling one more time for us so that we lose the others and we have a more accurate answer.
Maureen Friedland.
So this is based on a 5% increase in energy cost, and that's the column on the right-hand side,
yes.
Right? And if energy costs go up more than 5% a year, then our savings are going to be more and our payback is going to be quicker. Is that correct?
Your payback will be shorter, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we picked 5%. We had to pick some kind of number. But obviously 5% wouldn't be a good number this year.
Ray Ebert.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice it says 5% energy cost escalation above background inflation rate. Now, is that 5% or is that 7 or is that 8? In the committee, it was a straight 5%, and this kind of catches me off guard, and I'm not, don't really like surprises.
When I asked Chris, he said it's 5%. Why he had the background on there, I do not know.
Thank you, sir.
We had a meeting, we went through that, and we agreed to 5%. I did question him afterwards, and I probably should have just taken it off his sheet. It is confusing.
Other questions? Ralph Carey?
Well, you told me, I think you said when they did the paybacks, they didn't take the present value of money. Was it the architect or somebody that mentioned, you know, a dollar in 2008 is going to be worth more than a dollar in 2009, the dollar in 2009, but you had the dollar being constant.
The only thing we, yes, we did. The only thing we assumed is there's going to be 5% inflation on your fuel costs. That's it.
Yeah, so fuel costs go up higher, then that would pay back
if
sooner.
If the dollar keeps getting weaker, yeah, no, we didn't.
No, then the payback takes longer.
Yeah.
I don't think there's hardly ever been a year where it stayed the same as the previous year. It always goes down.
No.
Any other questions? Okay, what do we got next?
Well, it seems to me that the that I could try to explain the two resolutions that are before you unless the board members that sponsored them. You have two resolutions in your packet that came from the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee. One that is titled Lead Like Standards for Law Enforcement Center Edition, and the second one is Lead Standards for Law Enforcement Center Edition. For those of you that aren't on the committee, and committee members can talk for themselves, of course, but let me just, as staff, try to explain how we tried to take the motions that happened and put them into a resolution for you to consider. There was a motion by, I believe, Supervisor Mettinger and seconded by, I think, Supervisor Veenstra to adopt a resolution called Lead-Like Standards, which is, in the first part, is a scale-back version of commissioning that Don just described, which is only the heating, ventilating, and temperature control, nothing on the electrical system, and that it also saves on some of the labor of those systems that you're not commissioning. enhanced energy conservation measures with less than 15-year payback, then you see the 295, the purple sheet we just talked about, and then some of the items that were included in that were alternative transportation, stormwater, measurement, and verification, and that adds up to 388. And then a separate list of other environmental measures without a specific payback. You see I put the collecting recyclables, which is an earlier prerequisite, and then the rest of that list. That totals up to $630,000, and that was the motion of Supervisor Mettinger. If you look in the resolve clause, what it talks about is that the following LEED-like standards are added to the design for the addition by providing up to $630,000 from the general fund, or as an alternate bid, deleting the finish of lease space for state probation and parole from the project without increasing the authorized bonded debt above $29.5 million. Now, these numbers don't balance perfectly, but it's all subject to bidding. Now, what the and I don't want to speak for the intent of Supervisor Mettinger, but the concept was that we could bid out the alternate finish of the probation parole space, which is estimated between $400,000 and $490,000 right now, approximately, and that if we don't finish it out at bid award and the rest of these items come close, you'll be able to make sure that you stay within the 29.5. You won't know till the bid is there, but that was the intent of the supervisor, was to allow for most of these standards to be bid out and to allow that to proceed. The concept is at that time, then, it would require a two-thirds vote to finish out probation and parole and add all of these other things, and the funding source identified in the motion was utilizing undesignated fund balance to do that, not to go over the 29.5. It would still require a two-thirds vote because it expands the budget beyond 29.5, but it would not expand the authorizing resolution for bonding. Is that clear? That was the first resolution that passed on a majority vote of the law enforcement.
Pardon? Chair Johnson.
Can we just get clarification? I think Supervisor Bina asked this question early on. Can we get clarification on probation and parole and why that's the carve-out that we're talking about?
Right. A number of supervisors asked, as we continue to consider what are items that end up pushing the cost of the project, are there other things that we can either cut out or delay in the project that don't reduce the size of the building? In the resolution that you passed in September or October, there was a line item in there for 8,000 square feet estimated of finish-out space for probation and parole. At the time we included that in the resolution, we had not finalized any agreement, still have not finalized any agreement with state probation and parole. So there are two things. State probation and parole, as they've done the design and gotten feedback from the state, they're in favor of it, but they also want more space than the 8,000. Its since has grown to almost 12,000 square feet. Remember what I said earlier, the resolution triggers a two-thirds vote if you go beyond the 29.5 and if you go beyond the individual line items that were identified per square foot. So at some point we're going to have a discussion apart from just the bid amount. Secondly, and this is very important on probation and parole, is that none of the budget counted on receiving their revenue in rent. Because at the time that you adopted the resolution, we could not guarantee that, number one, we would have to build that space out. We don't have an agreement with the state. They still have to actually agree to a lease agreement as well as a dollar amount per square foot. So while I included that as a line item, I could not budget for and count on that revenue, which at $14 to $15 a square foot would probably be in the $120,000 to $180,000 a year of revenue that, again, is not counted on in the budget. Again, the reason we did that was I could not count on, because we didn't have a lease agreement, I didn't want to have a hole in our budget on a revenue stream that may or may not happen. So what's included in the motion by Supervisor Mettinger is to include that design in there, get a bid on the alternate, and evaluate that and the ongoing lease at that time. So if the resolution as presented passes, architectural staff and the team would go ahead and design the detail, so we would get a detailed bid on that and could either include it or not include it in the final bid award, depending upon these other items.
Sharon Hampson?
Pass. He covered it.
Vicki Burke?
I just want to make sure that I'm hearing correctly that the probation and parole will be included in the design, because philosophically, and we're still pursuing talking with probation and parole about their being able to follow through on that. It was essential, I think, because in the Carey report, it indicated that those numbers from probation and parole, and we've been working with them closely to keep that that population in the jail, which does impact the cost that housing those offenders. So just want to make sure that it is included in the design. And what you're saying to the group then is at the time the bids come back, then we look at the total picture. Is that how I'm hearing it?
That's exactly correct.
Jill Billings?
Yes.
Don Vina?
And the follow-up question to that would be, if the state, which are having their own financial problems, can't come up with the money, and if we don't get anything for it, why should we do anything at all? Why not leave them wherever they're at right now? I don't know where they're at right now, but you know, we got a tough enough time building our own jail. And a state agency, even though we work with them, they're talking about a lot of money. And how are we going to recruit this? Have you got an answer for that?
Well, maybe I wasn't clear on that. The fact is that the two separate offices of probation and parole right now lease space. This would simply be moving them to our location and paying us rent that is not in our operating budget yet. If we choose to do that, and that will be a separate policy decision by this body, to finish out the space and under this resolution award the alternate bid, and then you would fund that as one option from that revenue. You will have to make that decision when you actually see the bids. Under this resolution or under the motion that was made, we would do the complete design as if it was guaranteed we were going to build it out. That would be a bid alternate in the bid package, as I understand it, that when the bids come in, it's at whatever X number of dollars to finish, and you would need to make that decision either to keep it within the bid or not. If you didn't go ahead and do that because you wanted to include the other energy items that were identified there, you would still have the detailed design and could choose to do that a year or two afterwards. You would know what it would cost. You would have to bid it again because obviously it would be after the fact, but you'd have some basic idea of what that might be, and you'd also have a revenue stream, that being that rent range that I talked about, to actually pay for it. So you have some flexibility there. You're right that our priority must be the county court system, justice sanctions, the jail, those primary issues, but we're trying to meet both and keep that option open until we see what the bids are.
But the question I guess I still have is there's no guarantee we're going to get reimbursed for the cost of what we're going to do for the state agency. There's no guarantee we're going to get enough rent to pay for the costs or anything.
Supervisor Bina, then we wouldn't enter into a lease agreement that didn't cover our costs.
Okay.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose this discussion on the probation and parole is germane to this discussion. It's in the resolution, but it does say, or we either borrow the money from our general, or take the money from our general fund, or we postpone the finished space for state probation and parole. So is this an appropriate time to have a discussion over whether or not we should be dealing with probation and parole? I think we can have that policy discussion later. I don't know if we want to get into that level of discussion now. I think it's in the resolution.
Well, what I want to do now is to shift this discussion, actually not discussion. With my understanding, Mr. O'Malley was going to compare the two resolutions. We've kind of had people then, started by Ms. Johnson, delving in to the particular one. I want to delve back out for a minute and compare the two resolutions and then go into these more detailed questions because we don't have any of them on the floor right now. Ms. Friedland, you have to have a question answered right now, or?
Well, if this is an appropriate time or if I'll have a chance later. I want to know if 1,200 square feet is necessary to be in that building for us to still deliver the services that we should be delivering in the building so we do have a seamless operation. Is that necessary? And is it possible for us to find out better what the state's needs and intentions are before we go further on committing a certain number of square feet?
I think those are good questions, and we'll ask those after we compare the two resolutions. Okay? I will come back to you. But I do want to get these side by side so people understand the difference between these two general approaches that are being proposed here.
And I'm going to describe the second resolution, but that will be finalized in detailed design that would be included under that step. So we don't have to answer that now, but it will be done in detailed design. Is it 8,000? Is it 12,000? And what needs to be finished? The second resolution that passed on a minority report by the committee was to pursue full LEED standards. And again, it was my challenge to try to draft
this. Point of information, Mr. That didn't pass.
Right. It's
it was on said it passed. It never passed.
You know, it's here at a minority report.
It's here at minority
report. Okay, thank you.
There was enough minority that said bring it to the board. That's what I meant by passed. I'm sorry. The LEED standards is an attempt to, based on the score sheet that's in front of you, to go ahead and authorize pursuing LEED standards for the Law Enforcement Center addition. The total estimated cost, and again, it's an estimate, is that the total cost would be approximately $1 million. It's a detailed estimate based on the green scorecard that you have in front of you, item by item. So it walks through and goes to the full amount of commissioning. The estimate, again, is at $280,000. That's subject to bidding based on qualified bidders. Collecting of recyclables, I kept in prerequisites. Construction compliance certification services, again, those are identified on the green sheet. And then all of the other optimizing energy performance and on-site renewable energy, et cetera. So it's virtually the only differences between the two, if you put them next to each other, and this was helpful when I was talking to Sharon this weekend when she had some questions. The 280 in the LEED standards resolution that had a minority report is comparable to the 90,000 in the LEED light standards. The 15,000 collecting recyclables in LEED got moved to the other environmental measures. In compliance certification services, that entire 187,000 is eliminated from the first resolution I talked about. Every other number should be virtually identical if the numbers balance. So those are the main differences. Now, the other difference that didn't come up in the motion, and Supervisor Rauch and I were talking about it earlier, was that this motion, we believe, would push you over the $29.5 million. You could certainly include as part of this motion an alternate on probation and parole, just as we did, but it wouldn't get it to zero. The expectation is that Supervisor Mettinger's resolution would stay within the 29.5 or close enough that you'd be able to make a cut here and there to make that work. It's our best estimate based on the architect and construction manager team that even if you took probation parole out, you'd still be several hundred thousand over the 29.5. So as your administrator, my recommendation of how to deal with these is that as they sit in front of you right now, the LEED like standards, because it doesn't commit you until you receive the bids, would be a majority vote. Again, you'd still have to award the bid and stay within 29.5 to not trigger the two-thirds requirement. It is our estimate, based on the best information we have now, subject to bidding, that this second resolution that has a minority report would push you over that 29.5, even if you added the amendment of probation parole being an alternate. So we did the best we could. By the way, for those of you on the Law Enforcement Center Committee, you did a great deal of hard work over a period of time to try to get to a clear motion. So I just apologize. This was the best we could do to bring you to a resolution. So it may not have all of the features that you want, but it shows you two basic choices that are before you that are not yet on the floor, Mr. Chairman.
But they're going to be now. Vicki Burke.
I still want to be clear on this. The inclusion of the probation and parole is extremely important to me. I have the Kerry report with me this evening.
Ms. Burke, put the first resolution on the floor and then start debating.
I'm sorry. Now. I thought we were in discussion.
Well, we have to get the thing on the floor first.
I apologize. Item 2-5, to the Honorable Members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. regarding LEED-like standards for Law Enforcement Center addition. Whereas the resolution approving the addition of the LEC did not include pursuit of leadership in energy and environmental design certification and the construction manager estimates, adding these design requirements will cost approximately $1,007,000 more than the project budget. And whereas the Cross County Eco County designation endorses the principles of sustainable development and supports the application of these principles whenever possible, and whereas it is possible to add some elements of the LEED building standards that would enhance building operation efficiency and some improved level of environmentally sustainable building construction without obtaining LEED building certification. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the following LEED-like standards are added to the project design for the LEC addition by providing up to $630,000 from the general fund, or as an alternate bid option, deleting the finish of lease space for state probation and parole from the project without increasing the authorized bonded debt above $29.5 million, added requirements to include. We have the chart. Fiscal note, the County Board resolution approving the LEC addition requires a two-thirds vote to exceed $29.5 million. This resolution, adopted by the majority of the LEC committee, permits the addition of LEED-like standards that could be funded by the general fund, requiring a two-thirds vote, or deleting the finish of space intended for state probation and parole to potentially stay within the project budget by majority vote. This resolution should only require a majority vote, since it does not necessarily require the board to exceed the $29.5 million. The final decision will be determined after receiving project bids. I move for its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke, second by John Manninger. Ms. Burke, you have the floor.
Yes. I'm still, if this resolution passes, the space for state probation and parole will be included in the project design. Yes? Okay, so it's the or that's bothering me, from the general fund or. At the time the bids come back, then that decision will be made. Is that what you're saying? Correct. Okay, thank you. I would just like to point out, so I understand that you don't want me to say anything about probation and parole and why I feel that is so important at this time.
Well, if it's relevant to the passage of either of the resolutions, that's fine.
It is relevant because when Supervisor Bina was talking about probation and parole, I just want to remind people that in the Carey report, it talked a great deal about the number of people held in the jail that were either technical violation holds or people who may have had a probation parole or probation violation or had committed another crime. And we have worked significantly with probation and parole to try to get some understanding about incarceration of those people. The other thing that you need to know is that the amount of money that it costs us when those people are housed in our jail, as to the fact that the state does not always pay that fee for their housing. So it is an essential part in that whole continuum of criminal justice options that we have, and I think it's important to keep that in mind.
I'm going to be fairly liberal in giving you leeway on discussing these two resolutions. The first one is on the floor. Excuse me. The second one is not yet, but they're really kind of presented as an either-or. Obviously, we could have some amendments, but initially they're presented as an either-or. So if you want to argue in favor of one and against the other or vice versa, that's fine too, even though the second one is not on the floor. I want to have a complete, you know, comprehensive discussion this evening, so I'm not going to cut you off if you're saying, you know, something about the second one that's not on the floor yet. Tara Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is to you, Mr. Chairman, about the rationale for 2-5 coming in front of 3-5. It seems to me that the higher standard, both on vote and price tag.
2-5 is the majority report. That's got to come first.
But the content of the resolution, so if we pass that, then we still go on and vote on 3-5.
That's why I'm saying people can discuss either one. You can say, please vote against 2-5 so that we can vote on 3-5, but the majority report procedurally has to come before the minority report. I mean, that wouldn't be appropriate to do the reverse.
Thank you.
But you can certainly debate 3-5 and ask that people set 2-5 aside permanently, temporarily, whatever, so people can vote on 3-5. But that's the minority report, so that's got to come second. All right, I've got a bunch of hands here. I'm going to do them in order that I think that I saw them. Ann Fisher, I saw you next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this resolution 2-5, if after the bids come in, if we see that it's going to go over the $29.5 million, could we cut out some things that are on this, or if it's passed, is it a done deal?
You need a two-thirds vote to go over 29.5, so it can't be a
done
deal.
So it can't
go over. It's got to be within that, and the
right
intent of this is that there are two sets of alternates in some way that allow you to cut back when the bids come in. And
okay,
what Supervisor Mettinger suggested was to not cut that back, but to allow for the use of general funds. So he's suggesting a funding source if it goes over instead of increasing the bonding. That would still require a two-thirds vote at that time.
Okay, I just wanted to make. Okay, thank you.
Right path.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quite frankly, I'm kind of disappointed that we have to have this debate at all. Don and Eric, you've been before this full board a number of times. I know you've also been before the LEC committee repeatedly. You knew when we passed this resolution way back in September that we were at the $29.5 million level, and you also knew that there was a number of us on the full board here that wanted to see environmental improvements added in to this jail, especially during this time of, quote, an energy crisis worldwide. I'm just kind of disappointed that this whole board is going to be put in a situation that if either one of these pass, that we may be over the $29.5 million. I thought the board was quite generous in taxpayers' money to support unanimously the resolution of $29.5 million. And now, quite frankly, it appears to me, and I know the old saying that my mother used to always tell me, you're cutting off your nose in spite of your face, and some of these energy efficiency. And I'm quite frankly disgusted by it. I really am. I don't like 2.5 or this 2.5. I want to vote for 3.5. I think it's important. I don't know how we can go back to our constituents and the taxpayers and say we're building a $29.5 million jail, but we're not going to spend money on compliance certification services? Who's going to be how are we going to make sure that we're compliant? That very much frustrates me, but evidently that's considered LEED certified, so we can't spend the money on that. And as far as on the commissioning, I mean, I see these numbers are kind of arbitrary and capricious. 280,000 versus 90,000 for commissioning on balance, testing, performance, troubleshooting. I happen to agree with the supervisor from the 24th, who I share a lot of ideas with, Mr. Paff, and that is, I think that should go into the construction and architectural fees. I don't think that we should be responsible for that. The other comment, I guess, and I have a variety of questions, but I'll just leave it. Comment I have is that, quite frankly, this is the minimum we should be doing. This is the minimum we should be doing in the year 2008 when we're building public buildings. And now we're in a situation because of the decreased value of the dollar and international demand by China for steel and a variety of other comments that have been shared tonight that, you know, we may have to come back here for a two-thirds vote. And I think that the $29.5 million is what we need to stick to. But I also think we need to get better bang for our buck on this environmental stuff. And I don't know how I'm going to vote tonight. Quite frankly, I just as soon not have this on before the board tonight so we can get greater information and, you know, get more quotes, get multiple quotes, not just, you know, single source quotes that we've repeatedly heard here tonight. So with that, thank you very much.
Sharon Hampson.
Thank you. I just want to clarify the dollar amounts involved. The difference in dollars between these two resolutions is $377,000, and I get that by adding the $187,000 for compliance to the difference between the $90,000 and the $280,000 for commissioning, which is whatever it is. So you add those two together, it's $377,000. Okay. Now, in the now, therefore, be it resolved of number three, which we haven't even considered, it says by providing up to $1,007,000 from the undesignated fund, when in actual fact, it would only be $377,000, that being the difference between the two proposals. Now, so we've got a $377,000 out there. The cost for finishing out probation and parole is somewhere around $300,000 to $500,000. Those are the same numbers. I don't see why this puts us over the 29.5, because to me it's a wash. However, I have to tell you a little story about my dad. He was a passive solar architect in the 1960s, and he was a good architect. He was a lousy business person, never made any money. All he was passionate about was passive solar. Now, that means solar heating without any panels or anything. It involves orientation of the building, the amount of glass, and the amount of materials inside the house that absorb the heat. So it was a very strange idea at the time. This was in Iowa, and he made houses that in the Iowa winters needed no furnace at all. But this is a very, very challenging idea. It made people uncomfortable. The lessons that he taught me are you do it because it's right, and that costs always go up, and that you have to watch the subcontractors, because as soon as you turn your back, something goes wrong. So now, here are the top 10 reasons why we need to go for LEED certification. One, it's a guarantee by an impartial third party that we are officially green, that we get what we thought we were getting. And if it's not LEED certified, I'll assume it's not as green as it should or could be. An example of that is the YMCA in Onalaska. They went for the LEED like and are now having problems because they didn't go for LEED certification. Number two, leadership. In the community, we should be setting a standard, inspiring other people, and create competition among contractors to become LEED wise. And in the state, we're seen as leaders in justice sanctions, treatment courts, family care, solid waste management, prescription drug disposal, Lakeview Partnership. People watch us. So that's the two ways in which we can show leadership. Three, it's symbolic. We passed an eco-municipality resolution, and the very first chance we have to build green, we're blowing it. And it's symbolic. The LEED certification is symbolic in that it shows we're committed and concerned about limited resources and environmental concerns and future generations. If we don't do it, I propose that we rescind the eco-municipality resolution because we obviously don't mean it. So this would be a public statement of our values. Number four, building codes are tightening. March 1st tells us that. We've had to make changes because of the building codes. In 5 years, I believe that these LEED certification standards will be part of the code. They'll be standard. This is a trend, not a fad. And that's supported by many states and municipalities that are demanding LEED standards in their code. Number five, you spend a little money now, you save a lot of money later. Very simple. Six, it encourages innovation and creativity to meet the standards. We go back to the architect and the construction manager and say, how are you going to do this more cheaply? And they come up with stuff. They're amazing. Seven, you get extra productivity out of your workers in a healthier, safer building. We can't put a number on that for a payback, and yet this paper that was on our desk tonight talks about the significance of worker well-being and productivity, and they're actually putting some dollars on it. So maybe we could put a payback figure on worker productivity. Number eight, LEED prepares a videotape training program for employees in how to use the building, and a follow-up session 10 months after it's commissioned. Without LEED, we don't get that. 9, we unfortunately will most probably go over $29.5 million on this project because of energy costs that are going up, materials costs that are going up, and because we add things. Take, for instance, the garage. We started out with a simple garage, and before you know it, everybody says, oh, I want this, and I want that, and I want this, and I want that, and dive rescue, and blah, blah, blah. Before you know it, we've got a garage that's 12 to 15% bigger than in the original design. Now, imagine what's going to happen when we start talking about the guts of this project. And number 10, as Wilfred Brimley used to say about oatmeal, it's the right thing to do. Now, I am not thrilled about building a jail, but at least I want a building we can be proud of. Thank you.
People who didn't catch that the first time can tune into David Letterman tonight. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're done discussing the funding source or the how this 2.5 is going to be funded. I just want to make sure it's clear tonight. We're not debating whether or not we leave in or take out probation and parole. We're just putting it in there as an option. We don't have to debate that tonight. It's just an option.
It's just an option. People certainly are welcome to express opinions on those options, though, in terms of how we get to any particular outcome. Ray Ebert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think that to say that this building is not green because it's not LEED certified, I think, is a false statement. I think that in talking with the architects and in the committee, they have designed a very energy-efficient building, and I think to point fingers at them that they're not doing the job is really unfair. And then, since we'll really like to top things off, I'd like to make an amendment to 2.5 to amend under item A, to amend from item A on the $33,000 for alternative transportation, bicycles, and changing, I'd like to delete 25,000 of that and only include the bicycle rack. Under B, I'd like to eliminate the $20,000 for construction management, IAQ, before occupancy. And then those are items that I spoke with Mr. Carlson about and asked him if he owned the building and he was using his money. And those were two that he felt that he would not use. And Mr. Carlson, am I putting words into your mouth or was that relatively correct?
You don't have the right to plead the fifth here.
And then one I wasn't going to do, but after listening to the architect, I think also under A, amend to delete the $30,000 for the stormwater design quantity. It appears that would, if we're going to lose more parking spaces on that, and that the city is going to be taxing us anyway, that there's no reason to lose the parking spots. So I make those amendments for a total decrease of $75,000.
Mr. Ebert's amendment is to reduce $33,000 to $8,000 in the alternative transportation, bicycles, and changing, to delete the next line, which is $30,000, and then under B, to delete the $20,000 of the construction management plan IAQ before occupancy. Is there a second on that amendment, seconded by Mr. Erickson? Discussion. I'm going to, again, continue the flexibility. I'll allow discussion on the amendment or on the resolutions, either of the resolutions likewise. So you done with your discussion, Mr. Ebert, or?
Well, let me just explain. Actually, Mr. Carlson could probably explain the first two better than I. I think the first one on the not putting the changing rooms is pretty self-evident. On the construction management plan before occupancy, since we're doing the during construction plan, apparently that seals off a lot of the ductwork and all that.
and it doesn't really become as necessary to do the other. And as I understand it, in February we'd be actually, and I don't remember the figures, astronomical, the amount of cubic foot of air at 60 degrees that we're going to be putting in. I believe that money was primarily for heat, wasn't it, Mr. Carlson?
For heat and filters.
Heat and filters. So, and it's your feeling that we'd already have a pretty clean building? And then on the third one was just, again, that our architect had just mentioned about, and I hope I'm not taking you out of context, that if we build those swales and stuff, we'll be taking up additional parking spots. Is that correct?
Yes, it would take up more parking.
And then the city, apparently, according to some of our supervisors, is going to have a stormwater a charge anyway, though. So I'd like to, I'm finished there.
Bill Brockmiller.
Thank you. As a newer board member, one of the things I was wondering is the 2.5 or 2 and 5s on the floor right now, if that were to pass, does 3.5 still come up? Or what happens?
If 2.5 passes, we could still discuss 3.5, because if 3.5 also passed, being the second item to pass, it would nullify the first item, because boards can change their mind. So procedurally, that's how it would work. It would be weird, but it could happen that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not in favor of that resolution because I think those kinds of add-subtract things really belong to the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee, who have a better handle on the garnering points for LEED, and also they know what the trade-offs are. So I really think that's something that if we would that could come up later as we're trying to deal with the bids that come in, whether we can add and subtract at that point. I think it's too early to go after item by item. You know, if this were a $1 million item, you know, maybe so. But I think at this point where it's too early to start slicing and dicing what we've put into the plan at this point, and I would rather have the Law Enforcement Committee deal with this.
Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has got to be difficult for a lot of us. I'm one of the 8 of the 10 on the Law Enforcement Construction Committee that have sat through the entire event, and it's hard for us in wrestling not only with excruciating details but rapidly changing details. And our two new members and any others as invited by the chair who might want to join walking in at a late stage in this information development. I'm looking at, been described this evening, and I have seen it exemplified in our committee meetings, a number of variables that are a little bit of a concern to me. Not necessarily in a negative way, but I'll explain. First of all, in truth, on the subject of LEED certification and building to LEED standards, this is a new subject. It's new to the industry, it's new to building owners, and it just hasn't been around for a really long time, which leads to my second point, the depth of experience in the committee, on our staff, and in our contractors is enthusiastic, but it's not overwhelming. None of us have done this for a really long time. We have the variable that's been described in committee a number of times that it will affect our bidding environment of the economy. We heard again tonight details about, in the bidding environment, the local building projects that are going on that may make it difficult for us, and we don't know. We have, as of yet, still from the architects, incomplete drawings that make it hard for the construction manager to try and get his hands around estimating what these various things will cost. Nobody's fault there. It's just the wind stops at a window, but the wind won't stop at the window screen. It keeps on going through. We don't yet have solid drawings for us to pin anything on yet. So that makes these estimates, all of these columns and the numbers that we're looking at on the blue sheets and on the purple sheet and on the green sheets, it makes those guesses. It makes those best guesses by competent professionals, but as was described this evening, And as we heard, as we have heard in the committee a number of times, guesses with, in many cases, very wide margins of possibility. Included in that, of course, we've wrestled through it already too much tonight, the guess as to whether probation and parole will be in there providing income, whether we shell out for it or not. That's a guess at this point. We don't have a contractual relationship with them. We don't have a commitment for floor space. So frankly, I came this evening thinking that I would like to suggest that we defer both of these proposals by tabling them until we have the bids and we can in fact talk about real numbers. My problem with that, and it was politely pointed out to me, that I would have created too difficult a problem in the bidding process if I just say bid 2-5, bid 3-5, because in either case the architects, the design and drawing builders, need to be able to put all of these pieces of hardware and building change into the drawings so that the contractors, the bidders, can bid against a firm specification. So I wouldn't have offered them one. I can't do it that way. But now, at this point, I'd really kind of like to ask, of our architects, I think it was mentioned a little bit earlier, I'd like to get that reconfirmed, is there a minimum amount of work that they can do in building the drawings that will describe the lead choices that change the building? In other words, things that leave hardware or plumbing or cement or whatever in the building for us. And how much effort will you have to expend to put all those things in there so that we could send that out for bid and see what our local bidding environment would permit? And before I ask for that answer, I'll make a few final points. Number one, Mr. O'Malley prepared a comparative sheet for us in the committee on some people that are going through this about half a year to a year ahead of us at Blue Earth County over in Minnesota, and compared the differences, many of them, and similarities to our work here on our LEC edition. And I asked that a copy of that be put on everybody's desk so that they could see what I'm talking about. But my bottom line to that one is, down below, under additional lead consultant, a resident of Minnesota, Kevin Flynn of EchoDeep.com, it's a company that is ahead of all of us, our contractors, our staff, ourselves on committee, in looking at these issues, beginning to understand them. And I'd like to ask Mr. O'Malley if he was, I know he's made an attempt to get in touch with Mr. Flynn at my request, and I'd like to ask him if he has done so and if that might assist us in getting to real numbers. My bottom line is, I'm very uncomfortable in wrestling over numbers as if they were precise when they aren't. We don't have details about that. Mr. O'Malley, please.
Supervisor Rauch stopped in this morning and asked me a couple of questions, and I've been working on trying to follow up along with the other meetings that have been going on. The first question, or the last question that he asked, was about the concept of seeing if spending a small amount of time with Kevin Flynn of EchoDeep.com, who is the commissioning, or not the commissioning agent, but the lead consultant for Blue Earth County in their law enforcement center that is going to be LEED certified. It's one of the decisions that they made. I'm sorry, we're passing around the sheet that the Law Enforcement Center Committee has seen. I didn't end up getting that on desk. I talked to Mr. Flynn today. He's going to get back to me with a quote, but he estimates that it would probably be anywhere from 2 to 3 days that he could spend for a relatively low cost, given the cost of considering LEED, to give us some feedback and some evaluation with the team for probably in the neighborhood of $3,000 to $5,000 to evaluate if we've covered everything right, if there are some additional things to look at that that might help us be able to package these as a set of alternates. In addition, back to your earlier point, Supervisor Rauch, you asked if there was a way to to package this to actually get bids before we make a final decision. Right up to 5 minutes before we came down here, your staff and I were meeting with the team to see if there was a way to do that. We haven't been able to finalize what numbers would be, but and I'll ask either Paul or Eric or Don to respond, but it seems that the vast majority of the lead list does not have to be completed by the time that the bid documents are sent out. You do have to design to LEED standards and have to end up having a lot of that evaluation, but every one of those costs is not included. So that what we could do is to hold a special LEC meeting before your next county board meeting, evaluate that, give these folks some time to revise what that would be to design to LEED standards, but include a set of alternates, including probation parole as one, but these other packages as alternates, so that you could still go to bid and preserve the option of LEED, but recognize that the best estimates that we have now, as well as your workshop back in January, said that these costs will probably be anywhere from 0.6 to 1.9 over just a base bid. But then you would be able to evaluate it based on actual bids rather than to proceed now on this resolution. It would not require a decision tonight. It would allow your team to put together the exact numbers and revise that to show you that you're still investing in design, even if you don't award that, and what packages would not be cost-effective to take out as alternates. For example, the majority of that 295 list of energy optimization, other than the domestic hot water, which could be evaluated on its own, the majority of those would probably be included then in the base design. Commissioning would not have to be done immediately. It's something that happens over the construction and at the end. So we could work through that, but again, we weren't able to accomplish that. And so that's a rather long answer to two questions. One is, can the packages be put together to preserve LEED as a design option that then you'd have to evaluate based on the bids of what alternates you could include or not? If it went over the 29.5, as I've said several times, you would have to come back, but at least you'd be debating what you got for that based on actual bids, not the best estimates we can do now. And secondly, you could bring in Kevin Flynn for a few hours of consulting to evaluate where we're at and to work with the Law Enforcement Center Committee at a subsequent meeting to evaluate what's included there. And I don't know if Eric or Don would want to give some feedback. Again, they're trying to help you as much as they can. This sure. was just this afternoon, just between Public Works and Infrastructure and this evening's meeting. Is that all right if I bring Eric?
Thank you. I'll have a follow-up, though. Go ahead. No, please.
All right. We did look at, and I was looking, I'm not sure what color this page is, but there's a piece that Michael's Engineering did, and we kind of looked at that and looked at others, and there are opportunities with these LEED points to bid some of these as alternate bids. However, some of them, like I think Ray just mentioned, the changing rooms. We really need to know if those are going to be part of the process now so that we can start to design them and incorporate them, because they affect lots of different things, not only space in the building but different mechanical systems. So you can't take this list and say I can bid all of these as alternates. I suppose you could, but it's really a duplication of our effort. And so we didn't have a chance to go through it in great detail, but there are a portion of these that we could bid as alternates and probably look as good alternates. Case in point would be the solar collection as a possibility.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of follow-ups on that then. We are already, the committee and by extension, this full county board, under a rather aggressive schedule, not a whole lot of elbow room and a whole lot of time here. And my intent is not to make it harder on us, to squeeze us tighter in a more difficult corner in that regard, but it's my perception, and I will strongly support what Mr. Ebert said, that if we can get closer to having bid numbers, real numbers, we will have gone significantly towards avoiding surprises. And those bid numbers can give us a good surprise or a bad surprise, and we won't know until we see them. And then this board can be talking, my phrase, from real numbers. And so the follow-up to that for Mr. O'Malley and whoever else needs to address it, is there time for the events that you and I have just described? Is there time for Mr. Flynn to get down here and look evaluate, and make input? Is there time to have that very quick follow-up meeting of the Law Enforcement Center Construction Committee, which I guess is what we just said was needs to be before next Thursday's full county board meeting, if that's our objective on that? And is there time for the architects and our support team here to filter their way through figuring out exactly how to put these things in the plans and in the drawings? Not necessarily to have completed drawings, but to know that they're going to be able to do so.
Well, the concept of bringing in Mr. Flynn would take longer than next Thursday to get his input. What we discussed with the architect and design and construction management team, just as I said, just before this meeting, is there a way they can design up to LEED standards to include that? How much of that would have to be included so that the bid documents can assume LEED standards, and what can be bid as packages of that to be alternates? In addition to that, asking for some expertise or just advice as we're doing that design from the LEED consultant that Blue Earth is doing. The goal and what our architects and construction manager keep cautioning us on is anything that pushes us much beyond the timeline that we're on now will even hamper further our ability to get the project done and to get the best bids. So what we developed and what I'm suggesting is that we have a special LEC committee meeting next Thursday just before the county board meeting. By the way, that night you're going to be awarding, hopefully, bids for the storage building and for the remodeling. Also that night, then, the LEC committee could respond to, hopefully that we can get to you beforehand, a repackaging of these resolutions into what much more in design and what alternates could be there. So what can you take out if you need to withdraw from the project, but still build, go ahead, you know, what items can be taken out. And that's what they were working on, but we just didn't have time in the last half hour. So you would know exactly what you're voting on. Excuse me, I'm having trouble with my... what you were voting on that night, so you would know what could actually go ahead with bidding LEED standards, so that when that came back in August, when you advertised the bids, that you would know what the costs were actually going to be.
Okay, thank you. I'm gonna say, and I realize we have two resolutions and an amendment to one of them on the table right now, if I recall correctly. Excuse me. I'm going to say that I believe the best result tonight would be to table both of those, but I am not going to move that for that right now because...
Well, let me try this as an alternate, Mr. Rauch. You could move to refer the two resolutions and the amendment back to the committee with whatever particular instructions you wanted to give that committee. That would allow debate to continue to go on tonight until we're done debating, and then if assuming that passes, it would go back to the committee.
So we'd be debating the referral motion?
No, you could debate.
So we can refer it back and still continue to debate? My point was that I wanted people, particularly those not on the committee who haven't heard this all that much, to have as much time as they can stand to hear this subject, to discuss it, and to get more information. I don't want to cut that off.
Right, and again, what I'm trying to do is to be a little flexible on Robert's Rules of Order to allow people to talk about the entire picture. I'm not going to be arbitrary and say, no, you must speak on just this particular thing. So if you wanted to do a motion to refer, people could talk about the underlying issues. They could talk about Mr. Ebert's amendment. They could talk about whether we should or should not refer. Because I agree with you, this is the biggest vote we're going to be taking, or this biggest project we're going to be doing for a long, long time. I want there to be thorough debate, and I don't want people to feel constrained that, oh, I would have talked about that under this topic if I'd known I could, but now we're past that and I can't anymore. So I'm going to let Blue Sky, you talk about what you want to on this issue tonight.
Point of information.
Ms. Johnson.
Can I just get clarification? If this scenario played out the way you would, you know, let people participate in kind of multi-layers of debate, is it your intent then that we would vote tonight only on the referral motion and that the amendment and the two resolutions would come back next Thursday for votes?
If passes, then yes.
Then the other three votes would come next Thursday after the process that's just been described. So
correct.
The only vote tonight would be the referral vote. That would be the initial vote tonight.
That would be the
if
initial vote.
If that passes, then the other three would come Thursday, next Thursday.
Correct. They
Thank
would,
you.
They would come back.
Point of
Vicki Burke.
We will be at
We will be voting on Supervisor Ebert's amendment.
Not tonight if the referral would pass. If referral does not pass, then we'll be voting on his amendment before we vote on the underlying resolution 2-5.
Okay, so if I wish to make another amendment, do I have to wait then until Supervisor Ebert's amendment has been dealt with before I can make my amendment, or you're not suggesting, Mr. Chairman, that I could put two amendments on the floor at the same time?
We're getting fairly complicated already, so I would prefer that you hold your amendment. If you want to give some broad indication what kind of amendment it would be, just so that people have it in the back of their mind, but I don't want it on the floor at this point, or we're going to...
No, I'm just going to keep it a secret until I make the amendment.
You can keep it a secret, too, if you want. That's wonderful, too.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Point of order, Sharon Hampson.
Why would the motion to refer take precedence over the motion that was originally on the floor?
Robert's Rules of Order, a motion to refer takes precedence. That would be why. Anybody else have a
point of order?
You can go. Otherwise, Mr. Rauch still theoretically has the floor here.
But according to parliamentary procedure, that motion to refer has to be of the motion that's on the floor, which, in my understanding, is Mr. Ebert's motion.
Mr. Ebert's motion is not a motion. It's an amendment.
It's an amendment, but it's what's on the floor.
Well, the underlying 2-5 is first on the floor, and then
yes.
The amendment to 2-5 is with that.
Yes.
But if he makes a motion to refer more than one item that's on the agenda, that's appropriate. You can send multiple things back to committee. We're following Robert's Rules of Order as modified by Doyle's Rules of Order. And that's the ruling of me. How's that? Of course, by a majority vote, you can overrule me on anything. I'm just trying to make this process as, you know, customer-friendly as possible so that we get a good debate here and people don't feel like you're constrained.
Point of order.
Sure. Why not? Everybody else is.
Well, that's why I thought so. But would it not make more sense to vote on the Ebert Amendment and dispose of that so as the other two? I can't move it right now because I'm on a point of order, but it seems to me that that might help to clarify the situation.
Tom Rauch, you still have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will say the following things. First of all, I think if we refer this, it's referred back to the committee, and I'm not sure it's accurate to say, therefore, it will be on the full county board's agenda next Thursday unless the committee in their meeting says they want to send it here.
No. Now we get out of Robert's Rules of Order and into open meetings law, so it needs to be on the agenda for next week.
Thank you. And quite frankly, and this may be a disastrous mistake, but I am going to say at this moment I will not move to refer.
Can I put you on hold a minute, Tom?
Because I just want to let...
No, I want to go to Mr. Ebert because I think he wants to do something.
Yeah.
Now, I will withdraw the amendment if that helps. Obviously, reserving the right to reestablish it when we actually get
to
a vote.
And who was the second on that? Mr. Erickson, is that okay with you? Okay. So that is withdrawn. Now, Mr. Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Ebert. You made life so much simpler for all of us.
My golden life.
Yes. Well, quite frankly, then, because, Mr. Chair, you have said even if the motion to refer passes, we may choose to continue to debate and discuss. I will make the motion to refer both of these back to the committee.
With particular instructions?
I put
that as a question.
Yes.
One of those instructions would be to report it back next Thursday.
Okay. Then I will add that. Thank you. With the instructions to report it back next Thursday and to do their very best with the assistance of Mr. O'Malley and our contractor team to get closer to numbers on these, to make contact, if not actual presence, of the lead consultant to the extent that he is available. The objective of the referral to get the numbers closer to reality, to find out from the contractor if they can prepare bid documents to include these lead items, that therefore we don't have to decide until we see the bids back as to which ones we think we can afford.
And you will put that in writing so that Marion doesn't get totally stressed out. Is there a second to Mr. Rauch's motion, second by Jill Billings? All right, now you can talk about anything related to this project. I'm not, I mean, unless you get too wacky, I'm going to be pretty flexible in are we referring or not referring or what do we want to do. And I've got some names on the list here. Tara Johnson, you were next. You still up?
Pass.
Jay Johnson, you were after that. Chuck Spiker, you were after that.
Point of information, Mr. Chairman. Some people have spoken three times and four times on this. I thought your procedure was that anybody on the list for the first time would all be heard.
Correct, but if they're not on the list yet, I can't call on them. I don't know that they want to talk. So I've jumped over people to go back to people for the first time, but if I don't have first-timers, then I don't help. But I mean, I'm trying to give everybody a chance to go first, so I have not violated that rule.
I have a point of information then.
Certainly.
There's one way to beat the system. But this is really because I'm looking at the minutes of the 29th of April. The committee's for item 2-5 was passed 6-4. The other item was the Hampson Freeland Pursuit Silver Level of LEED certification. That was voted on and was defeated. Now, am I correct in that, or is there something else going on?
You're correct.
Okay, thank you.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. Hoping not to irritate Supervisor Spiker. You know, first of all, the resolution was really written as a compilation of a meeting. So I, too, was surprised to hear that we failed to include something that should have been included that seems to cause problems. On the other hand, there are parts of what Mr. Paff said, parts of what Mr. Ebert said, parts of what Mr. Rauch said, and then the latest what Mr. O'Malley said in terms of asking the design to now to come back and consider putting LEED in. I think our interest in the LEED certification, even though it might not have been stated in the resolution, was certainly stated on the floor, and the intent to have that done has always been present. So my question is, from what Mr. O'Malley was going to have us ask of the architects and design people to consider the including the LEED and what has already been done, is there really that much difference? Because the personnel that we have on board knew that was in our intent, and perhaps we really are closer to the whole LEED thing than we think they are. I mean, that seems to be an issue. Has it been designed totally without it, just because we didn't put it in our resolution, or are we really close to it? And I think the only people that can answer that would be the representatives here that have done the work on it. Because that is the question in my mind. We could be really very close because they knew that's what we wanted, or we could be totally far away because we didn't say it in the resolution, and I don't know where we are on that.
Paul, Eric, or Don, anybody want to comment on that or respond to that question? Without LEED, how close are we to LEED, I think was, in a nutshell, the question.
Well, we're going to go through just a little bit of the history of how we got here. In the interviews with ourselves and with Eric's group, LEED was discussed, the possibility of doing it. No direction was really given. When I came to the board and I explained to the board how we came up with your budget based on historical projects, I think I was very clear that they were not LEED projects. In the committee, we got to the 29.5, and I asked at that time, do we want to include money for LEED? These numbers are not based on LEED. So if I misled you, I apologize, but the projects it was based on were never LEED projects. So I'm not sure what the question is. Are we in?
The question really is, are we close? I mean, given all of these items, are we close to being LEED in the design work that has already been done, or totally without it?
Well, no, I don't think you're totally without it.
Well,
you're a very energy-efficient building. Are you at the LEED standard? No, you're above the code standard. So you're You're in between, and that's what we tried to put numbers together, what it would take to get to the lead. I think Mr. O'Malley makes a good point. We came up with a thought before the meeting how we can try to get this to the point where we can bid it and still make the decision on lead afterwards at a lesser number than what we're looking at. And I think if we can bring that back to the committee, I think we can make some headway here.
John Menninger.
I don't know if I answered your question or not. Maybe I didn't.
John.
Well, you know, we never did, as a body, ask for lead. We talked about it, but there was never a motion made. This body never voted on it. It seemed like a lot of people wanted to do it, and I think certainly if there was a vote taken tonight, a majority of the people in this board would probably vote for lead. But the number that's always stuck out in my mind is two-thirds. And when you get, you know, in this whole discussion, I mean, who knows what these bids are going to be? I mean, we may all be shocked, you know, maybe on the good or the bad side when the bids come in. Let's hope it's on the good side. So this whole discussion maybe just, you know, send us all back to the drawing board. But anyway, but this is an important issue. But first and foremost, I think we need to remember that we wanted to have, in addition to this jail, that was fit for civilization for the inmates and the people who work there. That's number one. A jail that, for whatever reason, was built inadequately a number of years ago, and we've had all kinds of issues and problems in it. That is we have to remember that's what we're trying to do here. Certainly we want to have a lot of energy conservation and all those types of things. But it seemed to me, and I've been in politics for a while, maybe too long sometimes, but politics is the art of the possible. And I even teach my kids in the state and local government class that if you move two steps forward and one step back, you're actually making progress. And that's why I suggested the resolution 2.5, because it's about two-thirds of what we want. And sometimes I think that's about all you can get in government. And if you try to get 100% of what you want, you might wind up with nothing. And that's my rationale.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. If they're coming back next Thursday, could Spiropolis get us, if they did that stormwater design, we're going to lose some parking spots. How much revenue we lose then? Because we just talked that about during construction, we're going to lose so much revenue. It wouldn't affect the bids, but it would affect our operating budget in years to come because it would be a revenue item there. So could Spiropolis figure that out by next?
Jim, can you do that? You can give us how much we get per space, I assume, and then the architects can tell us how many spaces that is.
Right. So that'll be a hard number. And then we had that about the what was it for the bicycle changing rooms? We're going to save money on gas, but then we're going to spend money on hot water to give them showers when they get here. Is that really a great money saver? I don't know. You know, maybe architects would comment on that later on. I didn't. They. John was talking about you know, getting two-thirds. We're not getting two-thirds on his motion. You're probably getting 95%. Under his motion, you're going to be spending $29.5 million or whatever. And the other motion, you're going to be spending closer to $30 million. You know, the energy efficient, the total building is basically going to be the same building except for a few minor things. But that's what happens when you deal with budget. You got to set a priority and figure out which ones are the best cost-benefit things and move on. And the other thing I want to know, so I can get on the architect again next Thursday, when they build this thing, don't we get some guarantees and some warranties from the contractors? Besides the architect not being able to check on it for more than 2 days, are the subcontractors, don't they guarantee this stuff for a year or two? Do they? What kind of guarantees or warranties do we get on the systems, the heating, the ventilating, whatever? Don't they guarantee this stuff? You said it's like a car. Something goes wrong, you take it back. Okay.
Is that the taillight guarantee that we get?
That's the taillight guarantee. When I get the last check, it's done. No, you get the standard in construction is a one-year warranty.
Okay, so heating is
your rough, and that can be 10 to 20 years. There's some items that are extended warranties, but
So you're saying if the heating, we didn't get very good heating or cooling in some zone, somebody's coming back and we're not paying for it.
That's correct.
Ann Fisher.
Thank you. Don already answered my questions. Thank you, Don.
Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to offer an amendment to 2.5. I move, and I'd like to speak to it following the second. I move to amend the resolution by adding the words, if needed, after the word fund in the fourth paragraph, and delete, or as an alternate bid option, deleting the finish of lease space for state probation and parole from the project.
Seconded by Mr. Burns. You got the floor.
It seemed to me in my questions that I asked that it didn't matter if this happened to be in the resolution or out of the resolution, because it's my understanding that that space will be in the bid option. So, I mean, I don't know if it's my age or my gender or this little voice in the back of my head that I have ignored sometimes in my life, but I'm not going to ignore it tonight, that tells me that if it is, it stays there, it is the first kind of option that people will leap on, and I would like it removed, because I have looked at the Carey report today and read it extensively on those parts that talked about probation and parole and the impact on costs for us as a county and the amount of people who were housed in the jail and how much work has been done with probation and parole. And I just feel that having them in that area makes working with them much easier, and I would like to make that amendment.
Don Bina.
A point of information.
Jill Billing.
I'll read the paragraph as amended. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the following LEED-like standards are added to the project design for the LEC addition by providing up to $630,000 from the general fund if needed, without increasing the authorized bond debt above $29.5 million. Added requirements to include.
All right, and that was seconded by Mr. Burns. And Don Bina, you have the floor.
Well, the discussion probably should be on this amendment.
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make one point, and that is I sit on the West Salem Fair Board, and during the winter months, one of our buildings went down with the weight of the snow. We started immediately to get bids to put that building back up. We're building a little bit bigger than what we had the last one. Our bids went out fairly early. The 1st of April, in one company, the steel we were buying went up 6%, and the other company we were buying steel from, the 1st of May, the bid went up 6%. So I think you better take a look at steel prices, because they're going up through the ceiling. Steel in the building is going to continue to go up, because one bid was for the rafters and the other one was for the horse stalls and horse equipment. So the longer we wait, the more sure that the steel prices are going to be going up through the ceiling. But we had ordered ours prior to the increase, so we were okay.
Ray Ebert.
Yes, in response to Supervisor Burke's amendment, I'll be voting no on that. Again, it's going to take away an option to fund this and keep it under the 29.5. So I think it's not a good, a particularly good alternative.
Maureen Friedland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, regarding the amendment that was just offered by Ms. Burke, I think it really behooves us to somehow, I'm not sure how, enter into more discussion as to what probation and parole really needs. They thought they needed 8, or we thought they needed 8. It went up to 12. It may very well be that 4,000 square feet are enough to do what the Carey report has suggested that we do, and which I agree that we should be doing. So I don't think that we just blanketly give probation and parole what they want without further investigation into that. Okay. Second of all, I want to address Mr. Gary's comment that we are getting 95% of LEED by doing the first resolution and not the second resolution. That is absolutely incorrect. And the words LEED like in the first resolution, in fact, are really basically misleading. The first resolution is not a LEED-like building. If it was a LEED-like building, it's possible that maybe we didn't need to have the full LEED status for whatever cachet and value it might be. We would have an energy-efficient building that helps the environment and helps the people in it. But it's not a LEED-like building. Without doing commissioning, it's not LEED-like. That is really at the core of LEED. We've learned that commissioning is underutilized in public interest programs. Building performance problems are pervasive. Deficiencies such as design flaws, construction defects, malfunctioning equipment, and deferred maintenance have a host of ramifications, ranging from equipment failure to compromised indoor quality and comfort, so on and so forth. We need to find out what we can find out through commissioning. We just can't afford to build this building and have mistakes made in it. We need to have commissioning. And with commissioning, it would be a LEED-like building. Regarding Ms. Wood and what she said, or what she asked, if we are close financially, we really are close financially. The difference is $392,000, and I believe that's significant in what it represents as far as what we'll get with a LEED building. I could go on about that, but I think that as county board representatives, we have to be careful stewards of our county's finances, and a LEED certified building will do just that. We'll be taking careful look at our environment. We'll also be saving money on energy conservation and paying closer attention to how efficiently our equipment is operating. And we'll have lower costs for the county, and that will mean lower taxes for our constituents over the long haul. Sometimes you have to spend money to get something back, and unfortunately, energy prices are going up, and we're just beginning to find out how ugly the problem is, and we have to act now for a host of reasons, to work on the environment, to work on the building, and to work on what our community gets by having a LEED certified building and by living out the principles that we established when we said that we were going to be an eco-municipality. I don't believe, as Mr. Mettinger said, that we should be compromising here. This is not a place for us to be compromising. If we get the LEED certification, we can make a gigantic jump in where we are for the entire community, and we can have an effect, a positive effect, and we can be leaders in the community and in the surrounding area as far as using new standards that have been established, not just going by what basic code is. LEED is not even the highest level of energy efficiency that could be accomplished. It's a gigantic step, though, and I think we really need to do this. It represents our leadership. Then just one last thing. I had raised the question before about the consultant with the state, Tate Walker, with the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And let's see, Mr. O'Malley is gone.
No, he's right over there.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if there might be somebody in the state even that can help us to nail these numbers down a little bit better so we know what we have. Thank you.
If I understood your question, I'm not aware of anybody in state government that has a better handle on this, and I'm confident that the team that we have working on this is actually, mm-hmm. based on the percentage estimates that were given to us from the Green Building Council of what a LEED building costs, that we're pretty close to that. If I understood correctly, Supervisor Rauch's motion was to ask for some assistance from the LEED consultant who's doing Blue Earth County that could make sure to reassure us that we're on the right path, or if we're missing something, that there might be something else to put mm-hmm. there. That consultant could also end up doing some of the paperwork. We would come back to you with that decision.
Okay. Well, I thought that there was someone in Madison with the Energy Center of Wisconsin that would be another resource, but we could talk about that after the meeting. We don't have to do that now.
Okay. Don has been following up with them as well. You asked to have him follow up, so he can talk about that as well at the committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment on Supervisor Burke's amendment. I'm really glad she made that amendment. I agree with it 100%. Basically, the resolution that we passed to approve the new LEC construction passed on a unanimous vote, and that was part of our initial plan. So that's an important part of the plan. It may not be the most important, but it was part of the plan. It does reflect the Kerry Report's recommendation, and it was passed on a unanimous vote. Taking this out now, or having the potential of taking it out now, I think is dangerous. So what else are we going to take out of the plan? I think the plan was built, was scaled back from like a $50 million project to a $29.5 million project. And I'm really concerned that now we're talking about taking out things in our plan which I thought were prioritized, and we did this a few months ago. So I'm not sure why we need to consider taking that out. And the second thing is, wouldn't that, if we didn't finish that area, wouldn't that, in essence, increase the cost of construction at a future date? I mean, we all know the cost of construction are not going down, they're going up. And that's why I was surprised to see Supervisor Ebert say that he's willing to take that out if that's the case, because that's just going to increase the cost of construction. So I guess I'm not really sure. I don't want to say it's a precedent, but I think it sends I'm very concerned about where we're going, because what else are we going to whittle and shake out of this project? I don't think we can do anything else. I think we need to keep with the original plan. I think it's a good plan. I think we're building in four phases. I think it's a good plan for the future, and I don't see any reason why we have to take that out now.
Joe Veenstra.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to indicate a couple of things about the reasons for the vote that I voted for in the committee, which was for Mr. Mettinger's motion. And the reason why I voted that way, one, was because I thought the numbers were jello. I think we don't know what they are, really, and I'm concerned that they will go up. And the second reason was because I saw the least amount of value to our citizens in the actual certification, which is, to my understanding, a point counting process whereby somebody who gets paid a lot of money comes in and gets paid several tens of thousands of dollars to do that. I am all for all the environmental considerations, the vast majority of which were above and beyond the normal code, from what I understood. And I actually would have voted for the commissioning, but it wasn't included in the motion. I'm not sure. They indicated to us, the professionals, that the value was in the HVAC and the temperature control and not in the others, so that's what was put forth. And if there's less value in the others and that's what we could afford, it seemed to make sense. Thank you.
Is there anybody who has not had a chance to speak yet a first time that has any comments or questions? Mr. Erickson.
Yeah, I was going to say I agree with Supervisor Burns when he's talking about taking some of these critical things out, like the parole and probation, in order to add these other things in. I think we voted for, well, I didn't vote, but the board voted for the $29.5 million for the original complex. And I think if we're talking about taking stuff out just to add these LEED provisions in, I think that's kind of... not what we should be doing with this. I was going to say I'm going to be voting no on probably both resolutions, just because I think we should stick to what we originally told the community we're going to do with the $29.5 million. Second of all, talking about the resolution three, with the $187,000 for the compliance certification services, I think it's a little ridiculous that we're spending almost $200,000 basically just to be able to tell people that we're LEED certified. I mean, we can do some of these provisions that are going to help us sustainability without having to pay $187,000 just to get the title on it. And that's about all I have to say about that.
Anybody else for the first time? Anybody else that has not had a chance to speak on this issue tonight for the first time? Okay, we have several people who have spoken several times each, and I'm wondering how strongly you feel you need to speak again, because we've been here for quite some time, and it might be appropriate at this point to take a vote on Mr. Rauch's motion. No, Mr. Rauch's motion to refer takes precedence. A motion to refer takes precedence over the underlying motions, including hers, which was offered after that. So unless somebody made a motion to vote on hers before then, the motion that would be voted on right now would be the motion to refer. Okay.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly.
What happens to my amendment then?
It would go with those two resolutions. I mean, it wouldn't get evaporated into space. It would go with those resolutions to the committee and then back to the floor next week.
So the committee will vote on it?
If they choose to. Otherwise, it still comes back here.
Yeah,
you're the chair of the committee.
I guess I'll just make up my own rules as you're doing, Mr. Dole.
It's that vast power that I have up here, you know. I just flex my muscles all the time. All right. People who feel strongly that you need to be heard yet again, Ann Fisher feels strongly.
Well, I just would like clarification.
Sure.
I swear the more we talk about this, the more confused I get. But Supervisor Friedland said in Resolution 2-5 that there isn't commissioning. And, well, it says commissioning, balancing, testing, performance, troubleshooting, et cetera. You know, it's much cheaper than the other one, but it looks to me like it is commissioning, so I need a clarification on that. And also,
well, if you look in the last column, that's partial commissioning, the HVAC and the temperature control only, nothing on the electrical system.
So it's just not on the electrical. But it is commissioning. I mean, you can't say it's not commissioning.
It's partial commissioning.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And also, I just wanted to add that I think Mr. Menninger's resolution is very reasonable when we're probably getting as much as we can afford. All of us would like to drive Mercedes or something, but some of us have to drive Chevys.
Ben Mack.
I've decided to talk.
It's all right.
I read through all the materials that I've had, and I've attended four sessions of a natural step series, and I'm really, really thinking that we do have to be concerned about energy efficiency more than ever. I made a list. I mean, it's all the reasons why it's good to become LEED consistent.
That's what happens
and
when
I'm
sit
not
you
going,
next to Sharon Hanks.
I'm not going to read it back to you, but there are so many reasons and so many paybacks for actually going for the LEED certification. And for those of us who are concerned about what it costs the taxpayers, in the long term, a really decent, energy-efficient building will pay off and in the long run be less expensive than if we don't make this building efficient in energy, electricity, productivity of the people who work there and live there. I also just wanted to finish by saying I read the little article about the Blue Earth
Justice Center. There was the county administrator, Dennis McCoy, who spoke about the new Justice Center in Mankato. And he says the construction will cost just 10% of the building's cost over a 30-year cycle. And that spending money at the design phase will help cut into operation spending, by far the largest source of cost. And so if we make this building energy efficient, if we make it a much more comfortable place to be working, to be even for the people in the jail to be there, they may turn out to be better people in the long run. So I really think we have to think about the long-term costs and benefits of whether we do this. I'm in favor of 3-5.
All right. Anybody else feel a pressing need to talk yet tonight? Maureen Friedland does.
I'm sorry. I need to correct something that you said, though, Chairman Doyle. You said that the...
Jim Doyle?
Chair Doyle. Okay, whatever.
Jim is the other Doyle.
Okay, all right. Well, I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking about what you said about the difference in the commissioning being the electrical. And I did speak to the construction manager before the meeting, and I asked him what the difference is. It isn't just the electrical. It's also the plumbing, the kitchen equipment, the solar hot water if we do it. And the higher-priced commissioning would do an enhanced commissioning even for the HVAC. So that's the answer to the question of what's the difference between $290,000 and $90,000. Plus, there's a little bit of a stepped-up cost for additional labor charges that were mentioned. But it's the difference between inspecting the wheels of the car and not the engine, something along those lines. You really have to inspect the whole car before you go and buy it.
I was just reading what was on our resolution.
Right.
Ralph Geary keeps waving his hand.
Oh, okay.
I think he needs
I just wanted to clarify Vicki's amendment. She put in the words, if needed. And I thought if it was needed, the fiscal note kicked in on the back that it would have to come in for another vote, so I didn't understand the purpose of if needed. I agree that probation and parole should be in there because we all kind of agreed that it should have been in there. But she put that thing in there, if needed, and I thought, if needed, then something else kicks in. Is that how that works?
No.
Or not? Maybe I got it wrong.
Mr. Chair.
Vicki Burke, you can respond to that question.
Well, it is also in the other resolution, but perhaps when the bid comes back, the $630,000 from general fund won't be needed. So that's why it says if needed.
Okay, and if it is and needed, then the fiscal note kicks in and it comes back for another vote.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously can't exceed the 29.5, which was authorized.
Could I ask a question? You said LEC would meet before the county board meeting next Thursday, and exactly what time would that be? 1 o'clock or 12 or 11? Might be long.
You're the chair, but let's hear what Mr. O'Malley was thinking.
Based on input from Supervisor Rauch, as I've been trying to respond, this would be in that afternoon either at 3 or 4. Our goal as staff and the team would be to take what you've talked about and put that in a resolution or at least a draft outline that you would get in the next few days so you'd have enough time to react to that instead of getting it that day, but then you could prepare any amendments to that. The goal is to be in a position to design a LEED building, give that authority so that we can go get bids and see what the costs actually are, so that as of next week, without exceeding your limit, you can go ahead, design the building, but have a package of alternates that can keep it within boundaries so we can get our team working on the design.
So
I would suggest three or four.
I would suggest three. I mean, well, I know that I first of all would like to compliment the committee. They have really worked hard and have looked at many items, and those people who are on the LEC Construction Committee. I mean, this is the second committee. There was a previous committee that looked at the design and all of that and made those decisions, and now we're going back and looking at something that perhaps some people think should have been handled at that time. But I have to compliment the committee members. They've asked very good questions. They've received compliments from the architects and the construction manager and those about how their questions have been very probing and good questions. And so I think 3 o'clock is probably what we'll need to do. If that's, I'm the chair, right?
There you go.
Point of information.
Mr. Spiker.
Could the chair clarify exactly what referral means, send back to the committee? Will the two resolutions come back to the floor exactly and they'll have to be amended by the committee?
That is
correct. Okay, they're not going to change the resolution in that.
If the committee has a different idea, they could offer it as a substitute amendment or a new resolution, or they could do amendments to these, but these will come back as they left.
But when it comes back to the floor, will 2.5 be the one first?
2.5 is the one that is on the floor and would continue to be on the floor.
You.
John Menninger.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the purpose for a referral is to come back with a substitute. Otherwise, what are we, lost our minds or what?
No.
I mean, the purpose of the committee reconvening is to come up with another proposal to present to the county board. It might be a substitute for 2.5.
Right.
But that would then be on the floor.
Well, an amendment always comes then for a vote before the underlying resolution.
Right.
So if the committee came in with a substitute, we'd be voting on that first.
So we're not going to come back in with 2.5 and 3.5 like we never, but like we just adjourned this meeting tonight and start over where we were.
Well, that would certainly be the anticipation that will be, there will be some modification. But in terms of procedure-wise, 2.5 is on the floor, will be on the floor. Committee can offer a substitute amendment or whatever they want to, and then we would vote on that first.
Right.
Procedurally, that's how that will work.
Right.
So the motion before you right now is, and I'm going to read this because Mr. Rauch handed it in here, which is to refer both resolutions, which then would include Ms. Burke's amendment also, to committee with instruction to bring it back to the next county board meeting. The committee should obtain from the architect the expected cost to add lead items to the drawings, and also to contact Kevin Flynn to ask for consulting services and advice on our lead designs. That was made by Mr. Rauch and seconded by Jill Billings. Okay? People ready to vote on that? Mr. Ebert?
Is there money involved for this Mr. Flynn, and where is that coming from?
The estimate is between $3,000 and $5,000, and it would have to be from within the project budget.
Then does that need a separate vote, or would that be part of his? We kind of do things not necessarily in a real fiscal responsible way.
As staff, I interpret the intent is to verify that we've gotten the right information on lead by someone that has a little bit more experience than our team, but I have every confidence in our team that we're going there. It still has to be within the overall budget.
So if we pass this, we're spending the $5,000 or not?
That would be my understanding. We go ahead and get that additional expertise. It's not going for full lead, which is $1 million at current estimate. It's saying let's verify that we're on the right track and see if this gentleman can have any additional advice to our team. Our team's been working on it. They're providing us good information. But at the same time, Kevin Flynn from EcoDeep has a little bit more experience on this. It just verifies where we're at.
Well, two comments I would make on that is, first comment is Mr. O'Malley indicated that this guy may not be able to do anything in the next week anyway, so that assumes that he would be able to before we'd spend any money. Secondly, if $5,000 is spent on him, then we have $5,000 less to spend on the project, so we're not going over 2.5 or 29.5 by $5,000. It is within the project, so just so people understand that. All right, are we ready to vote? All in.
Of order again on the motion to refer. Is it common practice in a motion to? I thought a motion to refer was just like I move to refer to a committee. But when you put something else into that, does it no longer become just a motion to refer, but it also becomes a motion that includes some business other than just the referral?
Well, frequently we'll send a motion to committee saying bring it back in 90 days or 120 days or whatever. That's, you know, so this would be along those lines.
It's my understanding that in a motion to refer to committee, you may do that. You may talk about when it is referred, the amount of time, and so forth. That may be part of the motion to refer. It's my understanding that it cannot have within it something that is a matter of business other than just to refer for a particular time of day.
I don't think that you can put in a motion to refer another item of business, which is what you did.
I didn't do anything. Mr. Rout did, so.
You're the chair. You said you accepted it, I mean.
What I had intended was to give the committee some idea of what direction this board wants them to go. And that's why I suggested the instructions. In other words, give them some clue what we're trying to accomplish. That spending money on that guy gives me a little bit of concern in terms of whether that should have gone in there or not. But the other part in terms of, you know, to look at kind of pulling these things out and identifying them separately, I think is what we've talked about tonight, and I think that almost goes without saying that that is what we wanted to accomplish. Mr. Rauch.
With the items beyond referral and to bring it back date that I put in the motion were only to clarify for the record what the purpose is that I heard of a consensus and that was my intent as a member of that committee. And so if it is either parliamentarily inappropriate or if it is, hey, we all heard it, we 10 on the committee will get to that kind of work under our chair's leadership, I'd be happy with the approval of the second to withdraw both the part about architect and the part about the consultant person and let the committee make a decision about that.
And Jill Billings, you were the seconder.
If I might interject, I talked to him today. I don't have a written email yet back on the dollar amount to confirm that. He would not be able to do this by Thursday. We can still bring back the majority of what your actions are to start to design LEED and have this gentleman work with our team and the LEC committee to verify that we're on the right track. But he won't be. That's less than a week away.
So it sounds like it would be safe to eliminate that part, because all that would happen in the next week is to initiate those discussions and firm that up and not necessarily spend any money. So why don't you pull that part out? I don't think the other part was controversial. I think just the money spending part
was.
Well,
the instruction to go to the architect and ask for a price on putting LEED items in the drawings was my hoped-for objective of referring it back to committee. Give us the week to get that clearer number set.
Right.
But this group has heard it. The 10 people on the committee have heard it. And I'm confident that we'll do our very best to achieve that. And if it makes the motion less than appropriate to have that attached, I'm happy to have it removed if my second would agree.
So what is the motion right now?
The sentence on the piece of paper that goes up through...
To refer back to committee and bring it back before the next meeting?
That's it.
Okay, everybody understand that? The motion is simply to refer it back to committee and bring it back to the county board at our next meeting, which is a week from Thursday. All in favor of that motion?
Could we have a roll call?
Sure. Vote on the computer. Computers are off. Some people were going home before they were going home. We'll do it on a voice vote. We'll do it on a voice vote with hands. Because we can still record who votes which way. All in favor, say aye and raise your hand. And those opposed to the referral, raise your hand and say no. One, Mr. Spiker. Okay? All right. I think that takes care of it. Do we have anything else tonight? Future agenda items? Are there any that we need to mention? Okay, is there a motion to adjourn? By Bob Kyle, seconded by Marilyn Pedretti. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.